This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
The year is 1906. The president is the divine Miss Sarah Bernhardt. And all over America, people were doing a dance called the Funky Grandpa.
I own the first radio in Springfield. Weren't much on the air then. Just Edison reciting the alphabet.
Now my story begins in 1922. We had to say tickety, cause the Kaiser had stolen our word 20.
You see, back in those days, rich men would ride around in Zeppelins, dropping coins on people.
I chased that rascal to get it back, but gave up after tickety 6 miles.
I needed a new heel for my shoe. So, I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they call Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time.
The first one takes me back to 1934. Admiral Byrd had just reached the pole, only hours ahead of the Three Stooges. When I was a pup, we got spanked by presidents till the cows came home. Grover Cleveland spanked me on 2 non-consecutive occasions.
Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel. And in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say.
That's the Wright brothers' plane. At Kitty Hawk in 1903, Charles Lindbergh flew it 15 miles on a thimble full of corn oil. Single-handedly won us the Civil War, it did. I'd like to digress from my prepared remarks to discuss how I invented the turlet.
Now, where were we? Oh, yeah. The important thing was that I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. They didn't have white onions because of the war. The only thing you could get was those big yellow ones.
That's everything that happened in my life right up to the time I got this phone call.
So how do you know so much about American history?
I pieced it together mostly from sugar packets.
It is 26 minutes after the hour of 1, and this the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for fun and whimsy, tolerance, understanding, and love. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Verifying the phones are... Wait, and... There we go. By the way, I'm looking at the little Skype box here. And it's, you know, Skype is, in addition to being our phone system, you know, there's an instant messenger built in and whatever, and so people can do the status updates where they can tell you exactly how they are at any given moment. By this is how you know that this is, saying that these are my people. It's a guy, his status just says, hate. And the first two are in all caps. Well done, sir. Rick Emerson likes the cut of your jib. All right, it's 503-505-6964. If you would like to be a part of today's program with your comments, questions, clarifications, and ruminations, etc., etc., so on, so forth, et alia. You can also message us directly via Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. Again, that is Rick Emerson Show. That's how you do that. You can also do it via the text box. That's at rickemerson.com. That is at rickemerson.com. If you want to email, you can do that as well. I mean, it really is just, it's astounding. It's mind-boggling the number of ways there are for you to communicate with us. I mean, it really doesn't even seem, if you didn't know better, you'd think that I was making it up. You'd think that I was just pulling all of this out of my ass, or that I was some sort of a, or that I was some sort of a wizard or a warlock who was using the magic and, you know, in a series of concentrated spirits and bodily humors mixed together to communicate with people. But no, it's just science. That's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Don Taylor can also be reached via email. That is Don at RickEmerson.com. Don at RickEmerson.com.
And we're also on the Facebook and the Twitter.
Yeah, but nobody really cares about that stuff now, Don. Everybody's moved back to MySpace, or so MySpace would have you believe. Did you see that you can now use your Facebook information to log into MySpace? That's called giving up, kids. That's what that looks like. If you want to know what the sound of failure is, it is it's the sound of MySpace going, I guess you could just use your Facebook stuff to log... okay. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up later on the day, we got your Taser Watch, your Stupid Criminal of the Week, also your Corpse Watch coming up. Mr. Big Jim Willig is going to be in the studio later on the day with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, he will talk about the life, legacy, and a career of Mr. Sam Kinison and whatnot. We'll talk about Don Taylor's ringtone contest, and Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Police say a man swallowed his mother's stolen rings.
I don't know why.
A nude sleepwalker is awarded $14 million in damages. And Scientologists are targeting alcoholic Aborigines.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So you weren't making that up earlier when you talked about that this morning?
No, that is real news, sir. Real,
right.
Honest-to-God news.
So Bruce Agler was here this morning helping us fix our goddamn printer.
All three of us sort of like standing around like monkeys poking at the printer with a stick.
Seriously,
I won't work.
The extent to which that printer is the most hated object in the room by me cannot be overstated. I mean, I hate to be all Office Space about it, but really, you understand why people just have the unholy desire just to beat those things into just their component pieces and beyond. The love of Christ Almighty. All right, well, in any event, were you drinking whiskey earlier?
I thought perhaps you didn't notice that.
No, I noticed that. And by earlier, I don't mean yesterday when you were drinking whiskey. I mean literally like 5 minutes ago before we went on the air.
Well, yes, because I
don't care, you understand.
Well,
I'm just asking.
Yesterday, I felt the need for a shot of whiskey because I was sort of, I was a little on edge at the beginning of our day.
I didn't notice.
Because of the not bringing my work with me and the printer not working and that sort of thing. So, like, later I thought, the fine folks from Fun Employment Radio, they have a bottle of Pendleton whiskey over there. I will kite myself a shot from their bottle. But it was almost empty. So I said, but I have some Pendleton whiskey of my own at home, so I will take a shot now. And then, like Wimpy and the cheeseburgers, I will pay for it tomorrow. And I said I would replace some today. So I brought in my flask, and I had whiskey in my flask, and I poured some back into their bottle. So
this is a long explanation for the fact that you were just taking a shot of whiskey just now. None of this has anything to do with the fact that you were just drinking some whiskey.
Well, actually, it does, because I had whiskey left over in my flask, and I had a delicious cup of coffee with some lactose-free hazelnut creamer in it. And so I poured the remains of the whiskey into my coffee.
Because you don't want to let it go to waste.
No.
Okay. All right.
No. Plus, it made like a delicious whiskey coffee drink.
Okay. Look. If you need to be drunk to work with me, that's fine. I understand. You could just say that.
Doesn't everyone?
You don't have to. You know. Yeah. You don't have to beat around the bush.
Hasn't everyone? You are surrounded by people who just drink like crazy, and all the time in all of your shows, every edition of the Frick Emerson Show, surrounded by drunkards. What is the common denominator? You.
I was going to say, it's true that the only common element in all of my failed relationships is me. So I came to that conclusion long ago. But it was like I had the two revelations back to back. One is that I am probably the cause of all of the strife and discord in any and all of my relationships. And then immediately after that, I thought, well, so what? And then I just went on. So that was I realized the problem and then realized my apathy about the problem and the fact that I don't really care to fix it. Like in the same moment. It was an instant of dual inspiration for me.
Yeah, I think Tim Riley's the only person who's ever been able to work with you sober, and he's a saint.
Yeah, and also...
He is a superhuman person, really.
Also, it's because when you talk to Tim, you realize that, you know, he cares about people even less than I do. And so it's like, you know, to him, he was always just looking at the clock and just going, you know, and I mean this in the best way, just going, well, I'll be home soon anyway. What does it matter? You know? And it's like, and Tim could just take any amount of time in a room with anybody because he knew that within, like, 3 hours... however bad or good or great or terrible the show went, you know, whoever he had to work with, He was going to be home with his feet up on like a $9,000 footstool, sitting in front of a roaring fire with McGee, his Dalmatian, at his feet, you know, and just having a, you know, having a toddy of some kind, and just thinking, I'm Tim Riley, and looking at the window.
And reading something really intellectual, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, or just buying things off QVC because he was vastly wealthy. Just going, I guess I'll take that can opener that looks like a whale. Excellent. Please send that to my home. Have it here tomorrow or I'll have it killed.
And honestly, I don't think a single listener would blame me for pouring whiskey in my coffee if they had heard the conversation we had had between shows before we came on the air here, where you were just...
What conversation is that?
About black.
Whatever it is, I've already forgotten it.
About
all that conversation.
Whether black was a color or the
still,
absence of all color.
You still back on that?
No, I don't really care that much. It's
God
just
damn
that,
woman. That Move the, on. Live the, in the now.
The whole thing ended with you just smirking at me and saying, you know, I only do that because it's fun to wind you up.
Yeah. Oh, you're so easy to provoke. Here's the thing. You can't. The thing is, you can't let me know that it's so easy to antagonize you, because then that'll become my new sport. I mean, that becomes my new favorite television show, my new favorite record, my new video game. They all have the same name, Irritate Dawn. Because it's like you just carry a huge red button around on the front of you. Not Red Button's the comedian, that would be weird. Although easy to do now because he's dead. But an actual red button, or a figurative red button. You know what I'm talking about. And I can just reach over and just go, nonk, and you just kind of go, dibba-ga-dibba! And then I look over and you're drinking whiskey and consulting Wikipedia to argue with me about something that could not possibly matter less to me. So today it was like, is black, all the colors? Is it none of the colors? Is it, you know, is it fish nor fowl? Is it sometimes why? I don't really care. I have no investment in the outcome of that. Here's the thing. Whether black is all the colors or none of the colors, it looks the same to me either way. We still didn't have any goddamn ink in the printer, so it's not like it affects my life. So just so you know, I'm just, you know, carry that information going forward. Just realize most of the time I'm just jabbing at you. Because you're just the big thing. You know what you are? You're the animal that hangs the sign on its own cage that says, please do not tap glass. And I'm just the Nelson Munch. You know, that's...
You're punishing me because I care too much.
Yeah, but at least I have fun doing it. That's really what matters here. It's my enjoyment that really is of the utmost importance to me, Rick Emerson. I'm just saying. You know.
Yeah.
Just FYI. Okay. It's 503-505-6964. So all of this is coming up. Speaking of my enjoyment, which in this case is our enjoyment, that is the Taser Watch. We'll get to, again, Corpse Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week, Mr. Big Jim Willig, and all that. Plus, we've got Ben, I believe. Yes, Ben, listener Ben. Let me see if I've got this right here. I want to make sure that I get his name correct on this.
Is this Ben who was eating the McRib yesterday?
You know, he didn't really identify himself as that. He just says Ben, and I know we've got, you know, multiple guys. For a while, it was like everybody in the audience was named Brian or Dustin. And then we went through a thing where everybody, all the listeners were named Trevor or Todd. But now it all seems to be Ben's and Dave's. Rick, I'm going to be flying for the week of Thanksgiving, and I would like to hear Blood Rock on Friday, if possible. It is possible, sir. It would be awesome to have it playing on my iPod as a TSA agent gropes my junk. Thanks, Ben. I love this audience. I really do. All right, so we'll roll that out. You got to help me not remember to not forget that. You know what I'm saying? You got to help me remember to play the Blood Rock. So,
Blood Rock.
So you're aware, Ben, it may be toward the end of the program. It's a bit of a lengthy song. Also, it creeps everyone out. But we'll play it because Rick Emerson cares. And because Rick Emerson pays out the ass to ASCAP and BMI. I get that license, I'm going to use it. It's like somebody, what did Yosemite Sam say? I speak loudly and I carry a big stick and I use it too. That license, it ain't come free. So we're gonna play that song all the way through. Maybe at the close of today's program, just so we can end the weekend on a sort of, oh God, we're all going to die kind of note. So it'll be Blood Rock DOA coming up later on. Plus, we'll recap the entries in Dawn's ringtone contest. Have you gotten subsequent entries since yesterday?
Yes, and actually what's going to happen is we are going to talk about them today, and then I am probably going to actually make a final decision over the weekend because I got a whole lot more entries yesterday.
The expression on your face just now when I asked that was one of like, holy God, you wouldn't believe the entries I got.
Yeah, I figured one or two more would like trickle in, but it's like, no, as usual, everyone sort of waited till the last minute, and it was like, here, email. I was like, oh, crap. So, yeah.
Somebody suggesting as the tagline for the program, Rick Emerson making drinking a necessity since 1999. I take offense to the story, it's 1998. I won't have inaccuracies peddled on my behalf. Listener John says, let me guess, your printer is an HP. Got it in one, sir. And then he says, I hate those things. That makes, like, all of us. I mean, Here's the thing is the printer we have here is pretty cheap. I mean, I got it off Craigslist from some guy, which I know is how, like, every bad purchase starts, but that's also how every good purchase starts. I can say that, you know, about this Mac right here that is directly, well, not directly, but this Mac, the second of our three Macs here, got that off Craigslist from some guy. Works flawlessly. Hadn't crashed once in the, like, 7 months it's been running here, by the way. Craigslist, bit of a mixed bag. The printer we got, like, it works when there's ink in it and when there's paper and when it's whatever. But first, it's just that it goes through ink, like, absurdly fast. And I mean even, like, for a printer, it goes through ink absurdly fast. And also, I just had a hell of a time getting the ink cartridge out of there yesterday. And then, of course, it turns out that I was trying to put the new one in, but I bought a color cartridge and then a black and white cartridge, and it was like, I guess it makes that distinction on the box itself, perhaps. I mean, the box itself might actually say color or black and white. You know,
probably,
I choose to blame
yes.
the guy at Office Depot who didn't ask me to clarify. Also, the fact that it says the name of the printer on the side, it actually should just say, I don't know, it should just say, like, attention, Rick Emerson, have someone else do this from now on. So, fortunately, I came to that conclusion all on my own, and that someone else is Bruce Agler.
And it only really, you know, I mean, it does a competent job. It certainly doesn't do, like,
print everything
an awesome job,
puce.
But it does a competent job when it's working. But, like Bruce came in and he saw the stuff that I had printed out at home, and he's like, ooh, that's really nice. Do you have a laser printer? And I was like, no, I have an Epson. My last two printers have been Epsons, and I've personally found them to be awesome. Again, the ink is expensive. It's expensive for every printer, but my last three printers have been Epsons, and they've lasted a really long time, and they do an excellent job, and it's easy to change out the cartridges, and they just look good. Everything works really well with the Epson. So.
Yeah, so I mean, I have a great printer at home as well, but it's the thing of that's my printer at home. So for this one, I thought, no, I'll go with something really inexpensive, which. That is, it is, I mean, to use the example we use for a lot of things, it is the very definition of, like, the giving you the razor and selling you the blades thing. Especially because, like, here's a dumb question. I don't know from where ink actually comes. I mean, is it still, like, a tree that they get that out of? Wasn't that the deal at one point? Wasn't there, like, an ink tree or something? Or was it extract of some kind of tree?
I don't know. Some of it comes from carbon. Some of it, the colors. Some of it comes from, like, ground-up beetles and things. I mean, there's... And some of it is minerals. It comes from various...
Ground-up beetles and minerals.
Yes.
Is this before you rub berries on your cheeks to impress the other members of the tribe?
Yes. And then use your printer.
When you say ground-up beetles, is that like how you sometimes say ground-up Chinese children, you know, in a sort of wacky way? You don't actually mean that they're grinding up insects.
No.
It's not like toothpaste
some,
or something.
Some red dyes are manufactured by grinding up insects.
I bet those insects really had no anticipation that their lives would end that way, that they were going to be used to print out a clown watch story in Portland, Oregon by some jackass. Well, all right. It's 503-505-6964. Don Taylor tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Didn't I already do that?
Maybe, but we'll do it again.
Okay. Police say a man swallowed his mom's rings after he stole them. A nude sleepwalker is awarded $14 million in damages, and Scientologists are targeting alcoholic aborigines.
Yeah, I don't remember any of that. I think that's the first time we've done it today.
No, I read that before.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I know.
There you go.
So is your goal just to deaden me inside?
Yes.
And to make me just not care?
Yes, it is. See how easy it was to do right there?
Yeah.
Bam, baby. It's the new national pastime. All right, so we'll get to all of that. And this is normally where we would talk about what we did last night. Except what I did last night was just so fundamentally boring. I really did spend of all of my I spent I think 98% of my time at home last night doing and then folding laundry, and that's it.
Wow.
And I occasionally took a break to go into the kitchen to get sustenance, and by sustenance I mean Triscuits, because I was able to. They have, by the way, just FYI, confidential from me to you. They're having a sale on Triscuits at Safeway right now. You stand... Father, can I just say this? Do you shop at Safeway ever?
Sometimes.
Do you use the U-Scan thing so you don't have to talk to people?
Yeah, and I use it at Fred Meyer as well.
Okay. So, but the Fred Meyer one is immaterial for our purposes here because at the Safeway... And this is the Safeway in Tualatin, right? Shop at one here in
town.
Well,
no. Technically, it's like Oswego. It's the next exit down on Boone's Ferry.
So when you use the U-Scan thing at the Safeway, does it say the price out loud?
No.
Okay. The Safeway on 39th, I'm sorry, on Cesar Chavez Boulevard and Powell, the U-Scan there, as opposed to the thing at Fred Meyer, as opposed to the Safeway, apparently in Lake Oswego and like wherever, the U-Scan thing at the Safeway on 39th and Powell, it actually says the price of everything out loud, which makes me self-conscious, and it shouldn't. It's not like it's saying, like, you know...
It's not saying the product.
No, I mean, it's not going like, you know, whatever, you know, laxatives and tampons or, you know, whatever it is. People, rubbers, whatever you don't want people to, you know, or your people are get embarrassed by, whatever. It's not just that, you know. It doesn't say anything about the product, but it just says it says the amount out loud. So as you're scanning it, it just says like $3.98 scan, $5.42, $1. So when I'm shopping at Safeway, I go there last night on the way home, and you know, we were talking about this. Greg and I are on the same diet, and blah blah blah. And you know, I kind of default to eating a lot of tuna fish, you know, because it's cheap and it's good and it's, you know, and it's healthy and it's whatever. But they're having this sale on two things. They're having a sale on Triscuits, and they're having a sale on cans of, I think it's like Starkist tuna or whatever the hell. So, and the tuna is like 10 for a dollar. And the Triscuits, and I'm not talking about the
Seriously,
off-brand.
Seriously, the tuna's 10 for a dollar?
Or no, 10 for, you know, a dollar each, like 10 for 10.
Oh.
So, and then the Triscuits are 10 for a dollar I'd avoid, because you're not getting that. You're just getting mercury with a hint of tuna in it at that point.
I thought we'd been transported back to the 1940s.
No, that's the tuna that's made of ground-up Chinese children. But so they got Triscuits on sale, and I mean like the woven wheats, like the store brand. I mean like the actual Triscuits, because there is a difference. My brother and I at one point on one Christmas, because we were having this big argument, sort of a Don and Rick style argument about whether the Triscuits, because he said that thing about, well, you know, the Safeway brand Triscuits, you know, the house brand, that's just, you know, those are just regular Triscuits put in a regular box. And I said, no, I said, there's a difference. I said, the generic brand is not the same as the name brand. And so we actually did like a side-by-side comparison. And sure enough, the actual Triscuits, the name brand Triscuits, are a different cracker altogether. One is, in fact, a knockoff of the other. It's not the same thing in the two different bags. As anybody who ever had to suffer through that goddamn horrible, big-ass plastic bag of generic Fruit Loops or whatever that your parents would buy knows, it's a substandard kind of cereal.
Some of those things, not so bad. The generic Cheerios aren't so bad.
I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying it's not like it's the same product. It's not like the factory has two tubes that it goes down. One into a regular bag, one into one that says Cheerios. That's just wrong. But it's regular Triscuits, and they're like two for $4. I'm like, hey, that's a relative bargain, so I'm going to buy me some. So I go, and I'm standing at the U-Scan thing at Safeway, and I'm scanning all my products. And, of course, because I'm just like some weird Depression-era grandfather that just hoards things and then eats the same kind of food for weeks on end, everybody starts to look at me after like the 15th item that I'm scanning that goes, $1, $1, $1, $1, $1, $1. And people, they must have thought the thing was like broken or something, or it was stuck. And they're looking over at me, and it's like I'm not even a third of the way through the bag. $1, $1, $1.
Can't you scan it once and like hit something that's a
No, there's no,
a
no, because then they're trusting you, and they, how do you know that, how do they know you're not just saying like, I only have 5 of these, and then I got 50 or whatever. They make you scan each thing individually. Yeah. And also, I don't think you can scan the same one twice. Like, I don't think you can take the same can of tuna fish or the same bottle of soda or whatever.
Well, you'd have to be able to, because the barcode is going to be exactly,
you know,
the
I've
same.
Tried to do it in the past, and it's screwed with me, though. It's effed with me. It hasn't let me do it. So, but for our purposes here, that wouldn't make any difference, right? Like, it doesn't matter whether I'm scanning the same thing or not. I'm scanning the same item, whether it's the same actual can or not. It's the same product. And so it's just like, I'm $1, $1, $1. And finally, everybody just starts looking at me, and I realize, and it wasn't like that paranoid, like, they're all going to look at me. Like, heads are actually turning in my direction, because it's not like you're, you know, it's not like I'm wearing earbuds or something. There's a big speaker on top of the thing. $1, $1, $1, $1. And they look at, and they see that I'm just buying, and then I move on to the Triscuits, and then $2, $2, $2, $2, and... It just, it was that third-party recognition of your own neuroses where you realize how crazy you must occasionally look to other people. I mean, then I'm like sort of walking out, shuffling away like a bag lady with these two sacks on either side of me containing like hundreds of, you know, what looks like the same item. Just a weird. Anyway, so then I went home. So my evening was divided between doing and folding laundry and then walking into the kitchen to consume the Triscuits, which, by the way, I purchased in the cracked pepper with olive oil and garden herb varieties, which were fantastic. So I don't know whatever you did last night. Well, last night was Patrick's gaming night. So it was another Dawn sits around the house and lives a life of ease evening, wasn't it?
Except that he's been sick lately, and so he did not go, and he just stayed home. And he's been sick lately, and I don't know what's wrong with him. We're hoping he's not dying of something, but since he is not fond of... of doctors.
He's not actually going to go find out what it is.
Yeah,
he's just going to see if it kills him.
He needs to go to the hospital and have them give him one of those like full body scans and the anal probe and the blood work and the MRI, just see what's wrong with him. Because honestly, I asked him this the other day because he's been sick for about a week off and on, and he's been just sick enough to be sick, but without anything that we can figure out what it is. Like, occasionally it seems like he's running a little bit of a fever, and he's really tired, and he doesn't have any, like, real appetite. And then every once in a while he'll just throw up. But then it's like, then he's like, okay, I can go to work. And then he goes to work for a couple days. But then he took a day off last week, and now he's... Then he went to work yesterday morning.
So what is, I hate to be gross, but what is he throwing up if he's not really able to eat? Is it just like a horrible dry heaving, or is it just kind of?
Although I've been forcing him to like drink protein shakes and things since he doesn't want to eat anything. He's lost a ridiculous amount of weight.
Well, he's the thin guy to begin with.
Well, he wasn't when he started. And then he decided,
and then
about 6-8 months ago, he decided to stop eating fast food and he stopped drinking soda. And he just like dropped 35 pounds because men can do that. Like,
right.
I'm just going to stop eating burgers.
Yes.
Look, I'm thin now. Yay. And but the thing is, then he just started losing weight. And he's 6'2", and so it's actually starting to, like, be noticeable. But, so he stayed home last night. And it's been, it's also the thing, I'm sure he'll really appreciate me talking about this on the air.
Is he listening now?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Hello, Patrick.
He was constipated for, like, 5 days, and it became, like, such an issue that it became, like, the only topic of conversation in our house. So it was like being the mother of a 6-year-old. Like, every conversation would start with me, "How you doing, honey? Did you poop yet?"
All right.
Well, you know, when you're married, you do kind of talk about those things sometimes.
Really?
Maybe you don't, but some people do.
Maybe your marriage is different than some. I guess if it was an issue of, like, if it was a serious health concern, then
yeah,
of course one has those conversations. But I think, I mean, is it a serious health concern now? Is it more like, is he sharing it more like a Ripley's fun fact? Sort of a, you know, Dawn, it's been 5 days since I've had a movement.
Well, it's not like we talk about this every day, like all the time under normal circumstances.
Hey, let me ask you this. How many, okay, I'm sorry to everybody, and by everybody I mean Cheryl again. I don't know what Friday, there's something with Fridays. Look, it's not pee, at least. It's not
whiz.
So who was the one who first brought up the the fact that he hadn't...
Well, he did, because I wouldn't know.
Well, it wasn't... Okay, so you weren't asking, like... You didn't ask, like, are you having stomach problems?
No.
Are you having intestinal difficulties? And then he went, I haven't pooped in a week.
Yeah, no, he just, at some
he
point...
He volunteered it.
Yeah, at some point he just went, my stomach hurts, I don't feel good. You know, I haven't pooped in, like, 3 days. I was like, well, that's not good. That's not right.
Is he a once-a-day man, do you think?
I think so, yeah.
All right, well,
sort of again, I don't really... I haven't kept a chart or anything.
How many bathrooms do you have in your house?
2.
Oh, see, that's why you don't know. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
No, you got to have 2 bathrooms. Yeah, 2 baths, that's the only way to go.
Yeah. So anyway, so he stayed home last night and...
I have to continue on this.
Didn't go gaming. Oh, did we really? Okay.
So there's been 5 days now. Now, did you offer a solution? Did you then say, well, look, I've got some castor oil or whatever did you give people?
Well, first I got him the Metamucil because I thought maybe he was...
Metamucil because he's 90.
Well, hey, do not knock the Metamucil.
I'm not. I'm just saying, like, if you ever wanted to make somebody feel old, you might as well just get him some Polygrip, you know, while you're at it. And, you know, a coffin.
You know,
here you go.
I had this this friend.
Would you like an onion for your belt?
I had this friend a few years ago who was just like, he was like rigid about always taking Metamucil like every day. And I was like, that's a laxative. That can't be good for you. And then, I don't know, some time went by and I realized I wasn't getting enough fiber in my own diet.
Oh, God.
And the thing is, Metamucil, it's just fiber. It's good for you. It's not a laxative.
It's basically
fiber,
like having that colon blow stuff that they sell.
Not really. It's actually nicer than that.
Okay.
I tell you, you know, it is a weird thing to talk about, particularly on the radio, but I think every human being can relate to this, that, you know, when you do have a nice healthy
please
poop,
oh come on,
you feel
really
better.
Everyone poops.
There was even a book about it.
Right? Okay, all right.
But anyway, I gave him the Metamucil, and that didn't seem to help, mostly because he wasn't eating much of anything. So then I bought some, like, laxatives, and I gave him those, and that didn't do anything. And then finally...
What kind of laxatives? In other words, just in this. So if the Metamucil is a laxative, that didn't work.
Well, it's not a laxative. It's fiber. So basically, that's really just...
Well, what's the difference?
Well, a laxative is a chemical thing, and it sort of irritates and messes with your bowel and makes you need to poop.
Is one an instigator and one is an ease of use?
Fiber is just something that's good for you and helps push stuff through.
Okay. Well, that's a subtle distinction of that, yeah. I guess. All right. Okay. So you bought him like a medical,
yes.
Like a pill,
and
basically.
That, and so he did that, and that didn't help. So the next day, you know, he took some more, and then finally it helped.
Did he announce, like, it finally happened?
Yes.
It's a glorious thing.
Well, yes, he did. Because if you've ever been in that situation, man, it is about the most horrible feeling in the world. And you start wondering if you're going to, like, explode or die or something.
Like, you're living in your own kind of Portnoy's Complaint over there. So, you just every day, just, you know, you just go on without me. I'll just be here in the bathroom in case something happens.
Yeah. You know, we can move on to the other parts.
I'm just curious about this. So that was finally taken care of after the 5 days.
Right.
Now, did he feel better after that to the extent that, I mean, in other words, was that the cause of his just feeling bad in general or just a symptom of whatever was making him sick?
I think it was a symptom of whatever he has been making him feel sick, and he just hasn't been eating enough food. Which is why he's lost some more weight.
Right.
So he's been a little kind of feverish and kind of queasy and kind of just fatigued.
Have you considered the fact that he has the plague
or consumption? I'm hoping he doesn't have, you know, cancer or a tumor or something.
Well, I was worried about something communicable. I mean, like really something that you're going to get.
Well, considering he's felt poorly for like off and on for a couple of weeks now, if it was something I was going to catch, I'd have caught it by now. So.
Yeah, me too, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's root for cancer then.
Yeah. So he didn't go gaming last night and he stayed home. And then I said, you got everything here. Eat some soup. Take care of yourself. I'm going out.
Oh, yeah. You went to that Disney movie. Rapunzel or Tangled?
Tangled.
Yes. Is that good?
It's not bad. Princess and the Frog, which was their last one, was actually better than this. But it's really not bad. It's quite entertaining. And it was 3D, although, again, like a lot of these movies, it doesn't need to be 3D.
Is that where you sent me? So that was where you were when you sent me the photograph of all the Harry Potter nerds that were camped out.
Yeah.
Which was awesome, by the way.
I got there, and I was like, and there was this big line down the side, and all these people with umbrellas, and they were sitting on the sidewalk, like, camped under their umbrellas. And I was like, wow, these people really want to see this damn Disney movie. And then I realized at some point there were way too many of them.
Right.
And I thought, oh, I'll bet there's a Harry Potter show at midnight. Because Bridgeport Village has an IMAX theater. So it's probably going to be open. I'm sure it opened in several theaters.
At midnight.
In the big IMAX
And the
theater.
IMAX thing.
So I took a picture to show you.
It was fantastic.
I posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, nerds everywhere in the rain, which is great.
And then that was at 6, about quarter after 6, and when the movie was over and I left at 9, there were, like, I swear, like 6 times as many people. They were, like, all the way up and down both sides of that block of, like, the faux street of stores by Bridgeport Village, and they were, like, and I mean, there had to be, like, 1,200 people.
That's awesome. It really is. The thing is, I'm just a huge unabashed fan of stuff like that. Like, I went to the, you didn't read past the first couple books, right? Isn't that the thing? You stopped at like 4 or something?
Yeah, I stopped at
Goblet
4.
Of Fire or whatever.
So this, I'm going to be completely unfamiliar with what's going on. I don't know what the story is.
Nah,
you
kind of do.
You
know what you need to know. I mean, it's Harry versus Voldemort, and he's got a band of, you know, Scooby guys that hang. I mean, I'm not
trying
to diminish the books. I've read all of them, and I love them all, but you get the general thrust of it. And plus, the movies are just like the books. Where they cram backstory in to the beginning to bring, because look, I mean, even if you've read the books, or even if you've seen all the movies, it's been, you know, years, probably, you know, it's been probably 18 months or 2 years since you either saw the last movie or read the last book, unless you read it again or watched it again just to get up to speed. So it's like movies and books are pretty good now about making sure, like, if you came in late, here's, you know, or if you've forgotten, here's what happens. So I'm just a total nerd for that. I went to the when they sold the final book, when Deathly Hallows went on sale. Lara and I actually, here's what a dork I am. We didn't just go to like a midnight sale of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, the book, when it came out a couple years ago. We actually did a tour. We did the circuit of Portland, and we went to like 5 different bookstores that were selling Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. We attended, I swear to Christ, 5 different like street carnival celebration things for the release of Harry Potter, ending at the Powell's downtown on Burnside, where there were, I swear to God, like 5,000 people in the street. I mean, it was insane. It was so freaking awesome. We started at, I think, Powell's in Cedar Hills Boulevard, at Cedar Hills Boulevard in Beaverton, because we were there anyway from stuff. Came back, we went to like Borders or something, and then And then some other, like, sad indie bookstore that is overshadowed by Powell's that basically is like a pilot fish that just, like, tries to cling on, that tries to eat the crumbs that Powell's drops. And then we went to the Powell's on Hawthorne, and then we ended up at the Powell's downtown. And I swear to God, at the Powell's downtown, first of all, it was just people everywhere. I mean, it was like... It was like they were giving out like the cure for cancer or something, or like it was the WTO rights. I mean,
like
they were just
giving out actual wizard brooms.
Yeah, I mean, it was just in every direction. I mean, if you were there, if anybody was there, that you know what I'm talking about. You can tell it was a nerd gathering because I was wearing my RoboCop shirt, the one that just says, it doesn't even say RoboCop. It has the OCP logo and it says, I work for Dick Jones. And I wore it, and like every third guy was like, Dick Jones is awesome, RoboCop, you know, and everybody knew it. And then at midnight, or like at 2 minutes to midnight, when the book gets ready to go on sale, this is the greatest moment of my nerd life, I think. So I'm there standing in front of Powell's downtown a couple years back when Deathly Hallows goes on sale. Thousands of people. And then like 2 minutes to midnight, you hear this huge roar, this like, where you can tell something is happening like over there. And Laura and I are like, what's happening over there? And we turn, and a horse-drawn carriage with Dumbledore in it is arriving, and he's, you know, he's like the wizard guy, and he's, you know, and he's got the whole cloak and the whole thing and the whatever. And he arrives, and it pulls him, like, all the way up to the front door of the Powell's, and he gets out of the thing, and he's got a huge golden key in his hand that's, like, 2 feet across, and he, like, holds the key up in both hands, you know, like he was, you know, like he's holding up an Olympic medal or something, or doing, like, a dual black power salute, sort of a, whoa, can you feel me? And the crowd, you know, roars, and then he goes up, and he uses the, and there's, like, something attached to it, sort of like he presses the golden key against the door of the Powell's, and there's like a glow that happens, and then he throws open the door, and he turns around, and I couldn't quite hear him, but he turns around, and he mouths something like, you know, are you ready for some Harry Potter, or just something dumb, you know, and the entire crowd just sort of, you know, and then everybody stands in line for like 40 hours, and then, by the way, just unless anybody thinks I've forgotten about this, Sarah Dillon, of course, who. Just, I'm saying, just a little secret from me to you. If she ever shows you her copy of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows from Powell's, because the thing is, when you bought it at midnight, every time you buy a Harry Potter book at Powell's, they would stamp it with something that says, like, you were here and you got it at midnight the night it comes out, and then they break the mold for that stamp. Like, they should, the guy actually breaks it in half. So both of my Deathly Hallows books that I bought that night, I got stamped with the, you were here on the Hogwarts Express to receive Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And then they break the thing, and I'm, look at me, I'm awesome. Or lame, depending on your definition. And then I went to the space room and dropped off Sarah's copy for her because she was drinking and couldn't be bothered to go. So if she ever shows you her copy of Deathly Hallows and tries to front like she was there, and she was not. She was like into her 15th vodka and, vodka tonic. So.
Well, this being Tigered, you can imagine the experience was, magical in a way that only...
In a P.F. Chang's kind of way?
Yeah, in a P.F. Chang's kind of way. They were all, like, sitting around on the... people were camped out on the cold concrete in the rain, having made little makeshift shelters for themselves by putting all their umbrellas together. And when I was leaving the theater, actually at 9, and there were all those people there, as I was walking to the car, I heard suddenly this loud thing of the magical Harry Potter music starting. And all these people were like, hooray! Woo! And there was all this excitement. And I went, wow, something awesome is going on over there. And then a minute later, when the car came around the corner to the part of the parking lot I was in, I realized all it was somebody driving by in their car with their windows rolled down, playing the music really loud.
Fantastic.
But that was enough to get like 1,200 people like excited.
That doesn't. I mean, you know, it's like you've ever been at any concert, anything. You know, the same thing. Like if you're standing in line to get in to see, you know, whoever. I remember standing in line for an AC/DC show at one time, and every now and again, some guy like way off in the crowd would just go, AC/DC, and then everybody. Huge about, like, for no reason. I mean, it wasn't like he was announcing that they were there or something, so.
I wanted to tell you one thing about this movie Tangled, though, while we were here. It's the two main voice actors are Mandy Moore, because she sings.
Right.
It's a musical. And Zachary Levi, who's in Chuck. And it's like, but the thing is, there's a number of big burly characters in it. There's a captain of the guard, and then there's these two like nasty brothers who are chasing the main guy. And there's a pub that's all full of these big like awesome thugs. Like one guy has a hook for a hand, and you know, and there's an interesting little moment where there's a Monty Python homage where they're doing this song about all of the dreams they have of doing things like mime and being florists and stuff. And at one point, a guy with a great big full head covered helmet does like a little bit of like the dance from the Camelot number.
That's fantastic.
In Holy Grail, which is hilarious. But the voices of the big thuggy guys, one of the two badass brothers who's chasing the main character, the Stabbington brothers, the main one of them is voiced by Ron Perlman. The captain of the guard is voiced by M.C. Gainey, who was head of the others on Lost and is Bo Crowder on Justified.
Oh, okay. All right.
Jeffrey Tambor is one of the thugs. Brad Garrett is one of the thugs. And then there's another guy who is voiced by Richard Kiel.
Okay.
So they just, like, they went to the...
total nerd fest there.
Like, let's make a list of all the guys we can find. They're, like, big guys with these super deep, scary voices.
Excellent.
And hire them to be all the thuggy guys.
I'm really glad to see that Jeffrey Tambor's made a career for himself. Because, you know, the first time I ever saw Jeffrey Tambor, and then we have to move on to some news, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back with Big Jim Willick. It's already, like, 2:06.
Yeah.
Because we're awesome. the first time I remember seeing Jeffrey Tambor, he was in the Ropers, which was the spinoff of Three's Company. That is the first thing I remember seeing him in. Now, I know he probably did other stuff before that, but I don't remember anything prior to that. I can't think of anything he did before
first
that.
First thing I remember him from was And Justice for All with Al Pacino.
Which I don't think I've ever seen.
Oh.
What is And Justice for All? No, I'm thinking of Serpico.
He plays a lawyer. Yeah. He plays a lawyer, and there's a very famous, iconic scene where he goes crazy in the courtroom and tells everyone that, no, you're out of order. The whole system's out of order.
Oh, okay. That one. I've seen that, or possibly just that scene.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Tambor is a fellow attorney who goes crazy and has a really memorable nervous breakdown scene. And that's the first thing I remember seeing him.
Is that the one with Paul Newman? No, that's The Verdict.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell I'm thinking of. Okay, so but I'm glad to see that it worked out, though, because he was – and then he did Larry Sanders Show, which I thought was so iconic that he would never – I thought, well, that's it. Like, he's never – I mean, you think about that guy, you know, to be both Hank Kingsley and then also to go and then to go on to Arrested Development like that is really, I mean, that's a nifty trick that, you know, that's difficult to pull off is what that is. All right. Mr. Big Jim Willick will join us here in just a bit. Later on, a little Blood Rock for the people and Stupid Criminal of the Week and so forth. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Sam.
Well, let's start with a job watch.
All right. Is this a happy job watch or sad job watch?
Sad job watch.
All right. Let's see. I think this is the right one. We'll do this. Here's your job watch for Friday.
Minimum wage.
Yeah. Here's Don Taylor with your job watch.
More Americans are filing for unemployment. First-time filers for jobless benefits jumped by 2,000 last week to hit 439,000. That number was slightly better than analysts had predicted, but still not that
sad.
Great. Strategist Todd Horwitz explains, saying the trend is not looking good.
What cut is this?
Claims.
Is this claims?
Really a shock. Jobless claims go up and down, but our trend is still not good in the jobs market.
It was like he was trying to F us there. That's awesome.
It's not really a shock. Jobless claims go up and down, but our trend is still not good.
Okay, that sounds great. Oh, damn you.
Horwitz says even though stocks are doing well, that is not translating into more jobs for the economy.
The stock market is churning along at a nice pace and has had a pretty big rally here. So we're getting some conflicting opinions because what's happening is we're getting more of a disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street, I think.
Okay.
In the job market. Yeah. All right. So this is that thing where it could be worse. That's what this all comes down to. They go, well, I mean, it could be double that, I suppose. I mean, really, if you think about it. So
there could be more people unemployed than the more people that are unemployed.
Hey, did you see the other day that there's this story that came out where, you know, because the government tracks, the government that they track in the indicators of inflation. And, you know, so they can tell when it's beginning. And the way they do that is by tracking the prices of certain consumer goods and then contrasting and comparing them with the prices of those consumer goods during other times over the last 5 years as contrasted with American salaries. So the government uses all of these figures and they put it into an algorithm and they say, look, inflation is either happening, not happening, or beginning to happen. The government claims that there is no inflation happening right now based on their tracking of all of these consumer items and how much they cost.
No, it ended like June of
last year.
No, no, no.
You're thinking of the recession.
Oh, that's the recession.
They say the recession's over. That's old school, yeah. Don. Everybody's back at work. Everybody has a glorious job. The recession is over. They claim there is no inflation happening and that, in fact, it's not even beginning. So there's an independent group that does the same thing, and they actually are really savvy about this. They track the prices of items at Walmart because they say that Walmart – I mean, and I believe this is just a I'm not trying to slight anybody, but they say that Walmart typically attracts people who perhaps have less money to spend. Let's put it that way. Walmart, and look, and I say this to you, I'm broadcasting from inside a studio where all of the curtaining and everything that we have covering our walls here came from Walmart. In fact, I would say probably, 90% of the exposed surface areas in the studio, it came from a Walmart. So the Walmart on 82nd, by the way. But so Walmart, yeah, look, it's not like Walmart is really targeting people who, you know, who have a huge amount of money. So they, you know, they target, you know, middle class, you know, shoppers and down. And they said that if you track the cost of things at Walmart, that Walmart, in fact, there has been an inflation in that store for about the last 18 months. For the last year and a half, the prices of things at Walmart, it's gone up like 4.2%, which is pretty – I mean, that's pretty big when you think about
it. Yeah, that's significant.
So I'm just saying, for what it's worth, for whatever – that's like that thing they do every year, the comedy index, where they price like, what is the cost of a rubber chicken and a cream pie? And they figure what the cost of laughter is. Well, the cost of shopping at Walmart, which is sort of the opposite of laughter, has – that has gone up by like 4%. So I – which again – if you were to ask this guy, he'd go like, well, it could be worse. It could be 10%. But it seems like it's a bad – and plus then psychologically you're heading into winter where it's going to be cold ass outside and everybody's going to be – it's going to be dark and it, you know, the people are – you know, people are trudging, you know, through ice to try to apply for some job or whatever. It's just – it's a weird, strange, bad time out there. And winter is the absolute worst time for all this stuff too, because it's like people – a lot of them just get in the funk anyway. So, yeah, it's just a big drag.
It's just – it's kind of ridiculous, though, when they keep telling us there's no inflation. But I think if you pay attention to how much you're paying for things, you're aware of how much prices have gone up on certain items just over the last year. Because certain items that I know for a fact how much they cost, because like I was running the chocolate business, and I would go to the wholesale grocer and buy like a half gallon of cream. And it was like $5.69,
right.
And it was somewhere in the $5 and change thing for like a good year and a half. Well, I bought some last week. It's almost $8 now, and that's a jump. Mm. That's a jump just in the last six months. You know, earlier in the year, I was buying like bacon at the wholesale market, and I'd buy like the 3-pound packet and like break it down, and it was around like $8, and it's now $13. I mean, you know, and that's at the wholesale grocer. So well, so these prices are all getting passed on to us incrementally over these things. I don't see how people cannot notice.
I found myself doing this thing last night at Safeway, actually, when I was, you know, when I wasn't buying the 10 for 10 tuna fish and then drawing attention to myself. I actually found myself speaking of – it's so funny. I didn't do this intentionally. The reason I started the show today with the Simpsons, the Grandpa Simpson, I did not need it on my belt. It was the style of the time. We had a request for it. But it's funny because I actually – and to no one. There was no one with me. I was just shopping by myself. I actually found myself saying out loud last night at Safeway that I wasn't going to pay, you know, that amount. It was bread. It was a – there was a So I'm there, I'm standing in the bread aisle at the Safeway and whatever, and there's people around me, but it was one of those things that struck me as just so outrageous that I didn't think to use my inside voice, and I actually just said, again, just with and it wasn't like I was even standing near someone. I was all alone. So anybody who heard me say this and looked would have said, that guy's just talking to no one. I just said out loud, I am not paying $5 for a loaf of bread. To hell with that. And then I bend over to see what was on the bottom shelf or something. But I mean, you know.
Yeah, I bought a loaf of – I had my husband buy a loaf of Dave's Killer Bread about a week or so ago.
That's exactly what I was looking at.
And it was – I knew going in that it was an indulgence because we usually buy much cheaper bread. And I was like, honey, I want the good bread. Let's just spend the $5.
I love Dave's Killer Bread, but no way. And if my wife does that, then, you know, whatever. Like if she
– it was special occasion bread, because it is. It's $5 a loaf.
Well, I would hope. I mean, it better be special occasion bread for five goddamn dollars. I mean, and again, I know it makes me sound like an old guy, but still, Jesus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just could not in good conscience do that.
Well, when getting tuna for $1 a can is a great deal.
Yeah.
Because it really wasn't that long ago in our memories that it was like 59 cents, you know, and it's You know,
we're old and cheap.
We're old and cheap.
That's the thing.
I remember when it only cost $5 to go to a movie.
We should probably take a break here. Is that the end of the job watch?
It is indeed.
Right, there's your job watch for Friday. We're going to have a radio program.
Minimum wage!
Yeah! All right. God almighty. Hey, speaking of money, so when it comes to getting repairs or work done around your house, here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to pay some guy or some group of guys come out to your house, and then instead of fixing things, they just kind of... Do you ever get this sense that when you take your car to be fixed, for example, that while they're fixing one thing, they're just disconnecting something else? There's this thing that's happened with my car, and I'm not saying that this happened when I got my brakes and my tires done. I mean that sincerely. I'm sure it is just a coincidence. But talking about the worst time for something to happen. So I just got my, I got my brakes done, and then I got my, I got my my tires not rotated up, but I got moved the front to the back and replaced the front ones or whatever. And so then
because metal was showing.
Because I'm a cheapskate and I wait until the things are about to, and until Scott Landerville tells me that I'm going to die if I drive on them. And he's like, if you drive these for more than a day or two, it'll explode and you'll be killed. And I was like, well, fine. So I went and got those taken care of. But then just like yesterday, 2 days ago, my heater started doing this thing in the car where it doesn't, what do you call it, heat. It's like I'll just turn it all the way to the, to the red from the blue. So I turn the heat all the way on, and it's not like I'm just, it's not like some setting, on the dashboard that has eluded me all this time. Like there's some override button that says, some secret, no, keep it cold button or whatever. It's just like that now, no matter what the internal temperature is, the air that blows into the car is not actually hot. And I don't know why that is. And so immediately you go to like, well, I bet those guys who were fixing the tire, I bet they disconnected to. But then, of course, that makes no sense because it's like, what would be the possible benefit to the tire guy to unhook part of my heater? Like,
no.
None.
Yeah.
So, but we have had that experience where some guy like fixes something. And it's not even just that he's like skullduggerous about it. It's not like he distracts you with like a bright, shiny object and then disconnect. It's just that occasionally you hire a guy and he just doesn't know what he's doing. He just flat out has no idea how to fix something.
You go to the discount oil changing place, Jiffy Lube. And they like actually forget to refill one of the things they've drained.
Excellent.
And I'm not the only one that's happened to.
That's awesome. What is this interesting red light on the dash? What's that interesting smoky? Why is my car on fire? Why am I seeing the angel of death? You don't want to risk any of this. So if you're going to get something done in your house that has to do with electricity, I mean, electricity, I'm not saying you only get one shot to do it. I mean, some of the things that have to do with electricity in your house are serious and dangerous, and some of them are just inconveniences. But I mean, seriously, if something is going to be fixed, you'd like for it to be fixed the first time. It's like that when that guy came to fix my heat. It was cold. It was starting to become uncomfortably frigid in my house. And if the guy had just said, it's fixed, and then as soon as he left, it turned out it didn't work again, I would have been exceedingly unhappy about that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no time that you are more unhappy about that than when it's a thing that wasn't just being tuned up, wasn't just being tweaked or augmented, when it's a thing that like needed to be fixed and it just wasn't, or it needed to be done and it didn't get finished or it got done badly. So Squires Electric, you don't have any of these problems with those guys. Squires Electric, they do the job right the first time, and they're going to give you an estimate up front. So you write this number down. You may not need it like today. You may not. You might be building a house next year. You may be thinking about maybe next spring you're going to be putting an addition on your house or remodeling a room or just expanding, or maybe your business is going to be moving to a different location. You want to get the electrical wiring or the Ethernet wiring taken care of. Squires Electric can do it right, and again, they'll do it right the first time. And they're going to give you an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. No job too small or too large. 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. And they're a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Please tell me you heard it here, won't you? That is Squires Electric. Coming up in just moments, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio. Plus, later on today, we got your Corpse Watch, your Taser Watch, and Stupid Criminal of the Week. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm not the
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Going to be joined here in just one moment by our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig, with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Today, sir, we'll be talking about Mr. Sam Kinison.
That is correct. The incomparable late, great Sam Kinison.
Excellent. So that is Jim Willig coming up here in just one moment. Let's pay up another... Hello, hi. I'm a professional broadcaster. Let's pay another brief visit to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
An Iranian company is producing an Islamic Barbie, a modestly dressed doll called Fatima that it hopes will promote traditional values among Iranian girls. FAM, the company that created Fatima, accused her popular American counterpart, Barbie, of encouraging Iranian girls to flout Iran's strict dress code for women.
You pull the string and she's silent.
Hussein Homeh Suresh of FAM said the doll would defend Iran's preteens against the enemy's cultural invasion. 8 years ago, Iran's Institute for the Development of Children and Young Adults attempted to create a wholesome alternative to Barbie with brother and sister dolls Sarah and Dara, but they bombed while Barbie remained a bestseller.
They bombed? Really? Okay.
Dynamite vests sold separately.
Meanwhile, Iranian inventor Himat Komaili has unveiled his design for a sword-shaped Islamic necktie, an alternative to traditional ties, which are scorned by Iranian hardliners as a symbol of Western decadence.
I wonder if I could wear that on a plane. I wonder if they'd let you I wonder if they'd let you wear a necktie shaped like a scimitar.
Only if it's like less than 3 inches long, I think.
Yeah, just, you know, one of those big like Hassan Chop swords, you know, just like worn around my neck. I want to do that.
Wear it with one of your T-shirts with the Arabic lettering on it that says I like pie or whatever it is.
Yeah. So when Lara went to Turkey last, but yeah, she bought me a whole bunch of shirts with Arabic writing, and it's all very innocuous. Some of it just says like the name of the country, or some of it says, you know, like eat it Ted's or something, but it's like in Arabic.
Shasta.
And then there's one that's the flag of Turkey, but it looks. You know, but if you're like a TSA person, it looks really threatening because it's like the star and the crescent, and it seems as the
shirt is red.
Yeah, and it's a red shirt, and you know, and it's just
tap out on the back.
Yeah, I just love the idea of there being a Barbie, which it's not like a Barbie,
no.
Like it's a knockoff. In other words, Mattel isn't talking about making a Barbie.
It's a 13-inch fashion doll similar to Barbie.
It seems plausible in some way that Mattel would do that because you figure that's kind of that McDonald's, Walmart, no market left, unsaturated kind of a thing. And of course, then they would be able to wring a lot of publicity out of the fact that they had to, you know, give her like more, you know, realistic proportions or whatever the hell. But
would know the way she's dressed?
That's true. Hey, look at you. You ought to be in marketing. Because seriously, if you're just putting her in some sort of shame bag or whatever it is they wear, I mean, it's like, and then you just.
Yeah, I believe that is the actual term. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you
the
know,
shame bag.
Some, you know, then that's you know, so then you know, then everybody's fine. You don't have to remodel the thing at all. You have to get a new mold made or anything.
Do you think young Iranian boys are just gonna like rip the heads off and like, or just strip it naked and cut its hair and do stuff like that?
I mean, seriously, yes. Barbie looked at me wrong. She had to be set ablaze.
They could be stealing their sister's doll and like taking the shame bag off and peeking up underneath and seeing what kind of underpants she wears.
Manufactured with a knows its place grip. Right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our taser watch.
Here's your taser watch for what the hell is this? Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I can do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
Excellent. Here is Don Taylor with your taser watch.
A man in Marion County, Florida, was tased as he hid in a tree after allegedly stealing a vehicle with a 9-month-old child inside.
I'm sorry, Don, this is where?
This was in Florida.
Yeah.
At about 12:30 a.m. Friday, the sheriff's office took a report of a vehicle stolen from a Chevron station outside Ocala. The vehicle's owner, Damian Wells, had gone inside the station, leaving his 9-month-old son in the vehicle's back seat. The vehicle was then stolen and last seen headed towards Highway 27. The sheriff's office notified Williston police. A police officer spotted the vehicle on Highway 318. The officer stopped the vehicle and the driver took off, running into the woods on the east side of the road.
Sasquatch.
Marion County dispatched a canine and a helicopter. After an hour search, the suspect was located in a small tree. He refused to climb down.
In a small tree. That's what makes that funny, by the way, is it's not that he was just located in a tree. It was in a tiny tree. Like, I'm picturing it like a little dogwood, just sort of, you know, no one sees me. If I don't move, they won't see me. They won't know that I'm here.
There he is, the ficus. Let's get him.
He's a foot and a half off the ground. I'm hidden. He refused to climb down and was tased by the officer and eventually ended up on the ground.
Tasing a guy in a tree has got to be uniquely satisfying, too.
I won't come down. Oh, yes, you will.
Tase, thump, you know. That's great.
The 9-month-old was recovered from the vehicle's backseat unharmed. He was released to his father. The suspect, Francisco Cavillo, was transported to the county jail. He was charged with resisting arrest and driving without a license. Kidnapping charges are pending from Marion County.
So was he? So he didn't take the kid into the tree. He actually kept the kid, but then was like, it's every man for himself, you know, and just left the kid to his own devices.
I'm heading for the woods.
Scatter.
Find your own way. You know. All right.
Oh, by the way, he has 15 prior felony charges.
No.
Excellent.
Here's a picture of him. He's one of those guys whose neck is as big as his head.
Good Lord.
That is so great. I want to, you know, the thing is, though, if you're born, like, if you're in Florida, don't you figure that they just, when you're born, you sort of, it's like original sin. Like, they give you 10 felonies just as soon, like, out of the gate. It's like a door prize of some kind, or like,
welcome,
you know.
Welcome to Florida. Work these off.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's like you're born, it's like a handicap or something in golf, you know, that they figure that, you know, look, the odds are that you're probably going to need these at some point anyways. We're going to give them now. Wow.
It's not all Disneyland and Gator games. You're going to be working this off, buddy. Cool Hand Luke style.
After an hour, he was located in a small tree. And I just love the idea of him refusing to climb down. Like, how does he think that's going to end?
No.
There's a guy with tasers, a dog, and guns.
Yeah, a tiny
and a helicopter.
Yeah. And a helicopter. Well done, that guy. All right, excellent. There's your taser watch for Friday. You got me running, going out of my mind. I can't do it, bro. You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time. Don't tase me, bro. That's fantastic. Let's do one more here, and then we will go to Humor Me, Comedy 101, okay, with our friend Big Jim Willig.
All right. The Church of Scientology is targeting alcohol-dependent Aborigines with a drug bomb therapy, which the church has been warned could kill people with kidney problems. The Scientologists this week responded to a warning by the Northern Territory Health Department of Australia and stopped distributing literature which promotes a dangerous drug detoxification therapy. The group has been moving through remote Australia on an indigenous recruitment drive.
Really? Is that how sad things have become for Scientologists? They're not even at Lloyd Center anymore. They're just wandering through the outback saying, hold these paint cans for a second.
Can I give you a back rub? You look stressed.
God.
I can make you clear. Volunteer Scientology Minister Kevin Chapman has, with others, been operating from a tent in the public park in the middle of Tennant Creek, handing out a pamphlet called Answers to Drugs. The church has taken out full-page local newspaper advertisements, which use the Aboriginal flag and have photos of Aboriginal people who appear to be sitting in the Todd River near Alice Springs holding Scientology brochures.
That's fantastic. This is one of the best things I've ever heard.
The church claims its detoxification program, developed by L. Ron Hubbard, uses, quote, exact technology, and is the only successful drug and alcohol dependency treatment in the world.
What does that mean, exact technology?
What does anything mean if you're a Scientologist?
That basically is, they're saying we use specific things. That's what that means. Okay.
The clinical nurse manager at the Tennant Creek Hospital this week advised the government that the detoxification regime was dangerous and potentially fatal to renal patients. The pamphlet gives a formula for a high-dose drug bomb vitamin supplement to supposedly break drug dependency, which it warns can corrode the stomach and cause ulcers. It advises you to take aluminum hydroxide tablets, which gives adverse nervous system side effects, to ease any upset. The pamphlet also gives a recipe for a calcium magnesium drink to alleviate withdrawal symptoms. Jesus. The health department believes the whole regimen could be deadly to dialysis patients by causing hypophosphatemia, low phosphate levels in already weakened people. The hospital approached Mr. Chapman and requested he not distribute the pamphlets or conduct detoxification therapy.
By the way, we should say that this morning as we were struggling with the printer, Bruce Agler, who had stopped by and saw that story. That's why I thought you were making it up. Bruce Agler said something about Scientologists are going to be treating alcoholism in Aborigines. And I thought it was like the beginning of a joke. You know, it was sort of like a rabbi goes to Korea to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
It's actually just random words strung together, really.
And then you actually said, no, it's a real story. What did he say, Bruce? Bruce said, it was something like... I swear to God, this is Bruce Agler who said this. He said something very similar to...
Oh, my God.
Well, you know how Aborigines are. You give them one drink and they go crazy.
No, he said, well, I think Aborigines are like American Indians. You just give them a drink and they go nuts.
They got a bunch of, like, didgeridoos in the front yard. Oh.
It was great. Like, they're real party animals. They just can't hold it. You know, like, no, they're out of control. Like, you know, like that one guy, you know, that, like, you shouldn't give him tequila because, no, it just all ends badly.
Watching Paul Hogan movies till dawn.
God damn. All right. So there you go. It is the Rick Emerson radio program, which is awesome, by the way. The best thing you've ever heard. Don't deny it. There's no point. It's 503-505-6964. By the way, what are you doing next Thursday, Big Jim? That is Thanksgiving.
I have some plans to hang out actually with a longtime fan of yours, a friend of ours named Rick, who drives a radio cab.
Excellent.
He's invited us, me and my girlfriend, over for a nice Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, you know, there's going to be a Rick Emerson Thanksgiving spectacular happening that day.
Really?
So if you can carve out time in your busy social schedule,
I see what you did there.
You ought to be coming by. That'll be next Thursday from 1 o'clock until, I believe, I swear to God, I think this is Bruce Agler calling to defend himself. From next Thursday from 1 p.m. until, I don't know, until everybody's incapable of working the electronic equipment here in the studio. That'll be next Thursday, the 25th of November, the Rick Emerson Show 2010 Thanksgiving Spectacular, for which Cheryl Kanakoa, by the way, made a fantastic logo that I'll be putting up later on today.
Very nice.
Oh, and Bruce is gone. All right.
Bruce.
Probably too drunk to hold the phone any longer.
Bruce just wanted you to know that he disapproved
of
what you said.
Well,
that was it. That's all he needed to do.
I'm just a conduit.
I'm listening.
I'm a messenger.
You know I'm listening.
I just pass these things along. I'm just saying. And look, it might be science. Who's to say?
Calling us with his exact cell phone.
Yes. The saying that they use, what did they say? Exact technology?
Exact technology.
That sounds like sort of that 1850s, it sounds like 1850s speak. Like there was, I have this great book, I swear to God, and it's a real book. It's not like for a gag. It's an actual scholarly work. Then a shrink of mine, for reasons that now elude me, I don't understand why she would have done this. Well, anyway, but I had this shrink who gave me this book, and I swear to God, it was just called Lesbian Nuns.
I've read that book.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
And kind of hot.
I'm waiting for the movie to come out.
It's great. On the front, it just shows like it's like an old like 1930s picture of two nuns like arm in arm, hand in hand, just smiling at the camera, walking along, clearly on their way to have some hot lesbian nun sex.
And, yeah.
And it's a whole book about sort of the hidden sexuality of people in religious orders where you are supposed to be chaste and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, human sexuality using that as the microcosm. But they said that the nuns all had a particular phrase that they used. The phrase they used to describe their lover was, in fact, particular friend.
Hmm.
So you're like, well, my particular friend and I. So.
Well, the exact technology thing, that actually reminds me, because last night I saw that movie Tangled, and it was in 3D. And every time they show a movie in the real D,
right,
they make you sit through this ridiculously long speech about how, welcome to the exciting world of Sony Real 3D. You're about to have an amazing experience that will bring you directly into the... And it just goes on and on. And like my friend Eric said, I think when they recorded this, they thought nobody would ever have to listen to it more
right,
than once.
Right, right.
But at some point in the middle of it, they say, there's amazing 3D technology, which is used by scientists and researchers the world over. And every time, Eric and I look at each other and go, for what? What do they use it for?
That's a good question, actually. I hadn't really ever thought about that, and I've sat through that presentation two or three times now. I don't know.
What are scientists using 3D glasses for?
Well, until they can come up with a viable holodeck, they have to be, you know, reduced to just a basic three-dimensional kind of...
Just make it so fuzzy and putting the glasses on.
Exactly.
Hey, can I just ask you guys one quick question before we do the comedy thing here, before we talk about Mr. Sam Kinison? So it's on Star Trek. I'm talking the original Star Trek now. There's the replicator.
Yes.
That's the thing that dispenses your food and your beverages, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what is the deal with that? It's not just like a one-person automat, right? Like, there isn't just a big... There isn't, like... just crates of food in the basement. And it's not like a dumbwaiter where it just ferries it up from the hold.
I can answer this.
I can answer this too, actually.
Well, you go ahead. You're okay. The guest.
Well, thank you. When I was in high school, a friend of mine bought the Nitpicker's Guide to Star Trek, and it basically breaks down everything, including like how the dilithium crystals work, propulsion to push the ship through space. And if I'm correct, basically in the one of the cargo areas of the ship, they have like basically atoms that when you plug in your order, they assemble the atoms into the appropriate shape and conglomeration recipe of what it is that you've just selected.
So it just, merges everything together at the atomic or molecular level. Yeah. All the component parts operating under the assumption that there are only so many elements in the universe from which we can make anything.
Yeah, kind of like a mini teleporter. It basically just draws them all together and assembles them in a certain way.
And says, let's take all of these atoms and make it into a hamburger. Let's sort of make them into a steak.
Like having a palette of colors available, because from that you can make like whatever. Okay,
exactly. I've always imagined that the teleporter, whatever it's called, what do they call that again?
The replicator.
The replicator food. It's like if you've ever had a smart dog, one of these soy hot dogs, when they're cold, they taste exactly like a real cold hot dog. When you heat them, they taste like a hot cold hot dog. They don't actually plump up or cook in any way. They just get hot.
Yeah.
And I always imagine that that's what the replicated food is like. It's like, it's a lot like a hot dog. It's something in my brain is telling me that this is just wrong.
Yeah.
It's like Arthur Dent just waiting for a cup of tea forever. By the way, unsurprisingly, who has weighed in the...
Would that be our friend Thomas
Gill? Thomas Gill. Says, the replicator takes protein and converts it into the food you want, and then he notes... Oddly, but I'm assuming it's accurate, but at the same time, it's like you wonder how can he possibly know. But then on the third hand, I have no choice but to believe him. He says, by the way, that's healthier than traditional cooking. Okay. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's time for another exciting installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 with our good friend, Mr. Big Jim Willig.
Well, thank you very much, Rick Emerson. Laughter and comedy are the great equalizer. Because of the fact that you can be any age, any gender, any denomination or religion, and still be funny. And what's more important is that laughter and comedy can cross all these boundaries effortlessly. Laughter itself is infectious. You often hear about the healing power of comedy. It's true. Comedy can heal just like any doctor can. The only difference is our prescriptions are a little more direct, a little more personal, a little more instantaneous. Comedy, by many stand-ups' interpretation, is more intoxicating than any alcohol, more addictive than any drug, and when done properly, let's just say it'll give great sex a run for its money. With that, I will bring you another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, wherein each week we analyze a different comic or comedian, comedic actor or actress, analyze more than just their life and their humor, but also their impact on the world around them. This week we have selected Bad Boy Sam Kinison, the late great. Born in Yakima, Washington, big ups to our Yakima listeners. He and I have a kinship in that we were both raised in a very staunch religious background. And I was always taught that Jesus was loving and accepting and forgiving, but for some mysterious reason never laughed at all, ever, at anything. I remember distinctly that whenever the priest would be up at the beginning of Mass telling us a very long-winded sermon and homily about this is Jesus's life and how we should live our lives more like that. The only thing I was thinking is this homily needs a joke, just a small one, a little one, something, please. Because laughter draws us all together. It's a binding force. It can teach as well as entertain. Now, I remember the first time I heard Kinison's humor. My sister and my mother and I were sitting having dinner at a restaurant, and my sister said that she had heard a very hilarious joke. And my mother, wanting to support me and expose me to something else, said, by all means, please tell it. My sister then recanted Sam Kinison's joke of Jesus' crucifixion at Calgary, wherein he is nailed to the cross, surrounded by his followers, all of which who are weeping and moaning and crying out, why must our Messiah die? And Jesus, you know, being very wise up on the cross, just looks down and says, well, maybe I wouldn't if somebody would get me a stepladder and a pair of pliers. And based on that, I didn't know what was funnier. Was it the joke or was it my mother's reaction to that joke, of her jaw on the floor? And, you know, I didn't really see his material as being sacrilegious. I saw it more as being fearless, to be able to find the funny, ugly side to anyone or any situation. Last week we talked about Bill Cosby, and that was really my only reference point up into that juncture. And he's very much a PG or G-rated comic. I didn't know what the term working blue meant. So I was just instantly addicted to this comic that could take taboo subjects that you couldn't even whisper about in small circles. And he was just blowing it apart. He tapped directly into that vein using his background as a Pentecostal preacher. So I always thought that he used this, much like Bill, he used his own life experiences, i.e. being raised by a bunch of Bible beaters, and made this his launching point into comedy immortality. And I'm pretty sure that if Jesus could come back, if only for one day to catch one of Sam's shows, odds are Son of Man would laugh his ass off. So with that, I will turn the table over to the two people sharing the studio with me at this time, Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. Your thoughts on the late, great Sam Kinison?
You should go first.
Should I?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I'll just talk and talk.
Sam Kinison is one of the stand-up comics, and there's just a small handful of them, that the very first time I saw him, it was like, you know, you hear that phrase, my mind was blown.
Yeah.
And how often do you really actually have that experience where you saw someone who, you know, that I am experiencing something I have never, ever experienced before as far as comedy is concerned. Very similar in a lot of ways to the first time I saw Bill Hicks.
Absolutely.
Where it's just somebody who, yeah, is fearless and it barely channeled, just barely corralled rage.
Yeah.
But the rage is focused with just this pinpoint laser precision.
Absolutely.
You know, his background as being a Pentecostal preacher, which I guess he started as a child, didn't he? And
And
his father was a minister.
Well, it's a family, yeah.
Yeah,
it was a family affair.
And so he just was brilliant at using the cadences of that Pentecostal speech, the whipping up, you know, a crowd, the modulating his voice with just sort of exquisite gentleness, and then just raising it to this fever pitch, and just his timing, and just his comic timing, yes, but also just the rhythm of his routines was just amazing.
Yeah, he was like a maestro almost, in that he could bring his own voice up as a crescendo and then just crash it down upon you, and you couldn't help but be moved or changed by what he was saying.
And he managed to come up with this persona of somebody who was somehow out of control.
Yeah.
Because of the ostensible rage. But he wasn't. He was exquisitely controlled. He was just brilliantly controlled.
Yeah. And then came the coke.
Well, there is
and
that.
And the booze and everything else. But, you know, regardless, you know, a lot of comics will want to chase that sensation that they feel when they're on stage, and they try and fill that void with drugs and alcohol. But ultimately, you realize that there is nothing that can touch that feeling of being in front of a group of people and just being able to manipulate them in any way you want. When he was a young boy, he obviously, his family was Pentecostal preachers. He actually went to Pinecrest Bible Training Center, which just sounds like a joke. And when he realized that wasn't what he wanted to do, Sam actually ran away from home. And one of his later albums, called Have You Seen Me Lately, he actually took like the milk carton picture of him and used that as the cover art for his album cover. And it basically it shows that, you know, he knew that he wanted to speak to the people, but he didn't want to have to do it in somebody else's parameters. He didn't want to do it with a specific message in mind. He wanted to be able to just be free with it, and that's exactly what Jesus was preaching.
There's this great sound clip which I own somewhere, and it was you and I emailed back and forth about this, and I'll have to dig it up at some point. If I can find it, maybe the next time you're in, I'll play it. But I actually have a clip of Kinison from when he was still an evangelist, and it was actually because the whole deal with the evangelist was that they would travel, and it was Sam, and it was his brother Kevin, and his brother Bill, and then their dad, whose name I forget, and his mother Marie, and they would all travel around, and they would go to a church, and it would be like, you know, this week, you know, our guest evangelists are the Kinison family, which is hilarious if you say it now, right?
Yeah.
But they would say, you know, Bill Kinison is here along with, you know, Kevin Kinison and Sam Kinison. And if you brought in enough money, they would have you back, you know. But as Kinison talked about that, he's like, you know, when you were a traveling evangelist, the church really looked at how much came in the collection plate, and that determined whether or not you would be invited back to preach again next year. And so that's where the fiery style, a lot of it came from, because you had to, like, knock the money out of people, basically.
Yeah, and it's just like a nightclub, too. I mean, yeah. The more popular you are with the audience, the more likely they'll have you back. That's so hilariously ironic.
And Kinison had gone, he had left and gone to Los Angeles, and there was one big final sort of push that his family was doing through some section of the Bible Belt, and they said, well, look, Sam, we know you moved to L.A., we know you're doing the comedy thing, but, you know, the family, we're going to this church that's like in, you know, Des Moines or whatever. Could you come back, you know, just so we can do this one, you know, this one set of sermons, this one set of shows basically next month?
Yeah.
And so Kinison said, fine. So he actually went back and did this one final round of evangelizing with his family, and somewhere at home, and I couldn't find it last time, it was driving me crazy. I'll have to dig it up, but there's audio of Kinison, not as a gag, not as a goof, but like in the church doing the actual Southern preaching. And it's just, it's astounding when you listen to it. It's just fantastic, because that's when you realize what a direct line there was from that performance to comedy. And it's also sort of astounding that nobody else had ever done that.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, the big tent, the big church, the touring evangelism, I mean, it seems like a relatively recent phenomenon, but it's not. I mean, that's a thing that dates back to, I mean, you know, even before the United States, but I mean, it's a very American phenomenon ever since the country was founded. You know, the idea of religious leaders going from region to region and place to place. And he was the first person, though, who ever thought to link the two of those in terms of comedy. Don mentioned the first time you saw Kinison or heard him doing a stand-up and being a revelation. I was over at the house of this girl I was dating, and this would have been maybe, God, the late 80s somewhere. So, like, I don't know, maybe 88, something like that. But it was when he did the Dangerfield Young Comedian special.
Yes, ninth annual.
And it sounds so dumb. It's like it Slash tells this story about being over at a girl's house because she ostensibly wants to have the sex. but she puts on the Aerosmith Rocks album. And instead, he's like, but then I just, you know, I said to hell with this. And I just sat and listened to the album instead because he was so blown away by that. So I'm over at this girl's house and she had HBO and I did not. And the Dangerfield Young Comedian special was on. And Kinison came on. And I think that was where he first did the bit about the Ethiopians, yeah. You know. And it, you know, it's sand. You know what? It's going to be 100 years from now. It's going to be sand.
We got deserts in America. We just don't live in them.
Yeah.
Just give him a sandwich. And Moo, go where the food is.
And I just remember sitting there on the sofa and saying, "What is this?
Yeah.
Like, what is?" And she goes, "I don't know. It's a comedian, baby." You know, I'm just like, "Okay, but I mean, but who?"
And she's kissing your neck, and you're just totally
like, "Get off me, woman! This is comedy." but it was just utterly freaking amazing. I mean, it was just mind blowing, and so I saw that, and then I guess I didn't think much more about it because I think he had an album out or anything. And then a short while later, I guess maybe a few months later that year or something, a friend of mine came over and he had the Louder Than Hell cassette.
Yes, that's the one I learned on.
Where it's in the front, he's just holding the match that's mm-hmm. blazing. And there's a moment on Louder Than Hell when it's that thing, like you said, with the Jesus joke about, somebody would get a ladder and a pair of pliers. It's where the setup is all for this one line that you can't believe somebody said.
Yeah.
And it's where he's talking about the Manson family murder and he's listing, all of the various, you know, these injuries that were inflicted on, you know, on Sharon Tate and Wojtek Frachowski. And he's reading the police report and he's saying, you know, so the cops said that they stabbed this guy 75 times. They beat him. They strangled him. They shot him twice in the face. And I can't do it, of course, the way Kinison does. But he reads this long list of injuries. And he said, so I'm thinking at the end, he's probably going, you don't have to leave now, do you? I mean, you haven't cut off my head yet. And I mean, and it's just like, and you just, at the time, you just sort of cringe and you go like, why would anyone say that? And why am I laughing? He was really just an astonishing influence, I think, you know, on me and on a lot of people. The first time I heard Patton Oswalt, which we've talked about this before, that was pretty recently,
yeah.
Because I don't follow comedy the way that I probably should. The first thing that I thought when I heard Patton Oswalt, somebody asked me what I thought, and I said, I will tell you what I think. I think he is half Jon Stewart and he's half Sam Kinison. If you told Jon Stewart he had to deliver everything like Sam Kinison, he would be Patton Oswalt. And I've never heard Oswald make that observation or reference Kinison as an influence. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But it's like, I think Kinison can't help but be an influence on people now.
Absolutely.
He is so large that even if you don't specifically cite him or view him as an influence on comedy, you can't escape him. The shadow is just too big.
Well, yeah, he chiseled out a chunk of the comedy, you know, mammoth, you know, thing for himself. He made it his own entity. He almost reinvented comedy in the fact that, like you said, there's the preacher aspect and then there's a comedian aspect. And prior to this, there was never any kind of a culmination with the two. There was always a saying or some kind of form of taboo, which was, you know, someone refers to laughing in church.
Right.
It's like that you're doing something bad, like laughing in church. Why is that such a bad thing? Why can't you, you know, why does it always have to be so very down and very like, you know, yes, we're mourning our faith and you know, Jesus died for our sins and everything else. But, you know, if he was such a giving, loving person, why wouldn't there be something in there at some point in time about, you know, humor, finding the lighter side? Maybe back then it was viewed more as a weakness to have a sense of humor without it being like, you know, you must live this way, you must do these things.
Well, let me just play a little bit of audio here. So we're talking about Sam Kinison. We have him replicating a little bit of his preaching style here. So this is actually when he was – this is one of his HBO specials. I forget the name. I think it was maybe Breaking the Rules or Banned or something. But this is one of his specials in L.A., and this is Kinison talking about being a Southern preacher. I'm such a big failure. Hold
Engage.
On a second. And
study the Bible. It's a pretty fascinating book. People go, Sam, do you think you could do it again? Do you think you could ever be able to preach again? Do you think there's anything left inside you that has any good to it, that can shine a light into somebody's lost way? Do you think if you have to, if your soul was riding on the line and you had to testify and you had to make a commitment, if it was a final answer, what would you do? Well,
chills.
And it's weird because when you hear him, and then they cut to his mom, by the way, right there, who's sitting in the front row. And when you actually hear him doing, you know, his actual evangelism, it sounds just like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because you go, it's weird. He sounds like he's being Sam Kinison. I mean, and you realize that it wasn't like he studied comedy and then figured out how to preach from it. It was really that he just took evangelism and then went to comedy. And then this is, I think, a little bit of that. It's the same bit that I was referencing from the Dangerfield special. This is the other thing you sent. This is the Letterman performance of that.
I'm trying to help. I do the best I can, folks. I swear I do. I do the best I can. Like this world hunger thing, I'm really involved with it. I'm just like you. I see the same commercials as little kids out there, you know, hungry. I watch this on TV and I'm home. I'm going, God, you know how sad, how cruel. Because I know the film crew could give this kid a sandwich. Come on, you know there's a director 5 feet away going, don't feed him yet! That's the work I see as I'm talking. Get that sandwich out of here! Okay, Hodgie, back in the mud hole, all right? We're losing daylight. We are losing daylight. It's true. But I'm not trying to make fun of world hunger. If you want to do something about world hunger, I think I have an answer. I think a lot of people are adopting this attitude. You want to do something about world hunger? Stop sending them food. I mean, it's network television. I'll be the first. Look right here. Zoom in. Stop sending them food, all right? Don't send them any more food. You want to help these people? Send them U-Hauls. Send them boxes, you know, some luggage. Send them a guy there who goes, hey. Hey, you know, we just drove 750 miles across the desert with your food, and it occurred to us that there wouldn't be world hunger if you people would live where the food is!
And next, Rob Schneider.
And then they in the background, they don't even cut to him, but he's on Letterman and is the camera. And of course, Kinison's doing the, you know, the pacing thing. He's pacing back and forth, so the camera's staying with him as he paces. And on one of those moments, he passes by the camera, and the camera catches Letterman doubled over in the background. I mean, and clearly not like a stage laugh, a courtesy laugh. I mean, Letterman has lost composure in the background. Kinison was actually one of the only comedians to ever, on his first visit to The Tonight Show, be invited to sit with Carson, yeah, to come over, to get the nod to go and sit over on the couch with him. And where he did, and this is on YouTube, you can see if you've never seen this, is where he did a version of Are You Lonely Tonight, which is, yes, the Elvis song. And it was sort of a precursor to the Wild Thing. Somewhere at the end, he just dissolves into this huge, furious rant. There's a
During the spoken segment, which is, you know, in the middle of Are You Lonesome Tonight, and then he started doing the spoken segment as only Sam Kinison could, just devolving,
screaming,
into the screaming rant.
If you've never read it, there's a great book about Sam Kinison that his brother wrote. Bill Kinison wrote a great book called Brother Sam,
yes,
The Short Spectacular Life of Sam Kinison, which I think is out of print now, but which you can find used. And he tells the story, actually, of I interviewed Bill Kinison one time, and it's so weird because his voice sounds exactly like his brother's. I mean, they're dead ringers. And it's amazing when you read the story. Bill Kinison tells the story about the first time that Sam did the scream on stage. And it was when he was playing, I think it was like the Comedy Store or something. And he'd done open mic. And it was before he was a huge star, but he was no longer just like on those, like the Animal Nights where just anybody could get up. Like he had a regular slot. It was like every other Thursday or something. And he was living with this woman at the time who, you know, was not a fan of his comedy, didn't think he was going to be successful, told him to give it up and get a real job. And they fought all morning, they fought all day, they fought all night. And as Bill Kinison tells it, you know, they were fighting like as he walked out the door to like grab his, you know, to grab his coat. And he's like, I'm going to do comedy. And she's like, go do your comedy. You're never going to be anything. You're never going to be successful. And they were fighting all the way out the door. And he gets to the comedy club and he says, you know, and Sam was still seething as he walked on stage that night. And he said that when he went on stage, and this is the first time he'd ever done this, he just stood on stage for like a minute or two and just stared at the audience and just like was seated to them. And just seething and stomping back and forth. And the first words out of his mouth, he leaned down, he looked at a guy in the front row, or the woman, he said, hey, you know, are you guys together? Are you dating? And the guy says, yeah. And he goes, are you married? The guy says, no, we're engaged. And he says, oh, really? You're engaged? And he just had that little Kinison laugh, and he said, okay, before you get married, I want you to remember this face. And he leans down for the guy and just does, like, the scream. you know, that I will not even attempt to do. Everybody knows the Kinison scream. And Bill Kinison said that was the first time he'd ever done that on stage. And it was like the crowd, you know, just erupted. And that was like the moment of – that was the epiphany. That was the moment of revelation where it was like he had found his thing.
One of the things I always really admired about him, though, is that all comedians do relationship comedy. And his was – so, you know, vicious. So, I mean, just about how toxic some relationships could be. But the thing is, it never came off as being sexist.
No.
Because it wasn't, his attitude was not that, you know, all women were terrible. It was sort of like all relationships are terrible. It was, I don't even know how to explain it because obviously, you know, he was coming at it from the point of view of a heterosexual man. He did that one whole routine about like, hey, you know, going out with the guys, honey, can I take my dick this weekend?
They're just taking theirs. I was just wondering if I could take mine.
But at the same time, it's like it was his frustrations and his anger at bad relationships felt more like just this primal scream from the human id,
yeah,
not from a man who hated women.
Well, he didn't seem like a bad guy. That's the thing about Kinison, is that Kinison was, you know, he was, you know, people would say that he was, you know, he was edgy and he was dark and he did this sort of cruel humor, but he never seemed like an evil person. He didn't seem like a bad person.
But all the women I knew also found his stuff about relationships hilarious as well,
right,
because even though he was talking about women,
yeah,
you know, even women have had those horrible relationships where you're screaming, you know, I hope you slide under a gasoline truck and taste
your own blood.
You know,
well, he wasn't Andrew Dice Clay. I mean, that's the thing. You know, or any number of comedians.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the women be shopping guy.
Yeah.
It was like Kinison's thing, as you said, it was more about like humans are effed. Mm-hmm. But because I'm a straight guy, that is the perspective from which I will come. You know, it's just that people are fundamentally screwed.
My favorite joke about relationships that he has is where he's like, when you know the relationship is over and you just don't have like an out. So he's just like, you know, you pull up to a red light and you just want to get out of the car and run. Like, I just want to live. I just want to live.
And by the way, I have to say that just as a guy who spent most of my life working behind a microphone, here's the thing that Sam Kinison did really, really well and that I admire and that you almost don't even notice is something you just indicated, his microphone technique. Because I think it was Don, I think you touched on this when you were talking about his evangelism, is that he modulated. It wasn't just this one scream all the time, you know,
because yeah,
it wasn't just like a Slayer record. It was loud all the way through. I mean, it had like light and shadow and heavy and you know, softness to it and stridency. But it was also his microphone technique, which, as Don Geronimo used to say, and one of the reasons that this show has always done so much off-mic comedy, by which I mean things that are sort of yelled from the back of the room, is because one of the first things I ever heard Don Geronimo say is that stuff that's yelled from the back is funnier than stuff that's said directly in front of the microphone many times.
Very true.
And that's why they would, if you listen to the Don and Mike show, anybody, that's why they would always stick Rob Spiewak in the back of the studio to shout like, that's right, Don, because it's just funnier sometimes. Kinison does that, and it's that line you just talk about where he's, sometimes I would just want to get out of the car and just run, you know, or you're just, I just want to live! I hate you! And it's the simulating the running away from the car. And the fact that he has the presence of mind to pull the microphone away and to yell it is like a sense of dynamic that you just don't get if you're some idiot on stage at the Chuckle Hutch whose mom always told him he was funny.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have to have a strong background as a performer to know that stuff. And he just internalized all of it. If he'd just been a guy swearing and screaming, then he would have just been goddamn Andrew Dice Clay again, who I know in some ways gets a bad rap because, you know, it's a persona and it's a whatever. But, I mean, it's a persona that wasn't interesting and that wasn't funny.
The two of them were friends for many years until they had a falling out. But I actually had – I know a lot of comedians that were blessed enough to either work with or see Sam live. They all have, like, unique stories. When I first moved to Portland, I was living on a friend's sofa for a while and I was itching to try and – you know, I came out here to try and do comedy. So he, my friend Ed, pulled a few strings down at Dante's, and it was like an open mic night, or so I thought. So he gets off the phone. He's just like, "Okay, I got you set up tonight. You're opening for the headliner." I'm like, "Wait! No! I want to do like a, you know, everybody gets in line and like we all do our own." He's like, "No! They didn't do the open mic this week. They got a special guest star. He didn't tell me who it was, but you're gonna go on right before he does." So I hadn't done comedy in about 2.5 years. I was rusty. I hadn't done it very regularly before then too. So I was terrified, and so I whipped up a bunch of material. And normally when you bomb, you want to just get off stage as quickly as possible, so the sets are usually shorter. I did 25 minutes on stage to just about, like, the only response I got was heckling from other comedians that were in the front row. And it was like they were picking on, I was Duddits in, like, Dreamcatcher. I was just being, like, bludgeoned by a bunch of street toughs. And after it was over with, actually, at the very end, I'm on stage shirtless with a jester hat. My buddy Ed is standing behind me cupping my man boobs, trying for any kind of a laugh. Nothing. I walk off stage totally defeated. I'm sitting there with my free drink, and I'm sitting there, and I didn't hear the MC announce the comic that came on stage after me. I just started to hear this voice, and I'm like, I know this voice. I look, and there's this tall, bald guy on stage, kind of skinny, and he's going off, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's Carl LeBeau.
From the Outlaws of Comedy.
Friend. And like, I'm jaw-dropped, and I'm like, is that Carl? And the bartender's like, I have no idea. So he gets off stage, and I'm like, it's you. I can't believe you. And like, I totally couldn't even articulate. I'm like, can I kiss your shoes? He's like, no, they're new. I would appreciate it if you not. And so I sat down with Carl, and we talked for about a good hour and a half. Like, we talked about Sam. We talked about his career and everything else. And I asked him, because Carl was there when Sam was killed, when he was hit by the 17-year-old drunk driver. He was there on the roadside with him. And I asked him, like, I've seen in a lot of interviews, you know, you saying how Sam basically just, like, looked up to the sky and was like, okay, and then he just kind of gently slipped away. I'm like, did that actually happen? And he said, yeah, and he recanted it with just such a vivid clarity. I was in awe of the whole thing. And many, many years later, when I was still on the radio, we had a radio interview set up with Carl LeBeau. I couldn't wait. And our guest in studio was Craig Gass. And if you don't know Craig, he is an incredible mimic where he can do more than just like a Rich Little kind of like, I'm going to do all your mannerisms and it'll be funny. He creates, he steps into these voices and becomes them and can make them do whatever he wants. And he does the only spot on Sam Kinison. So we called up Carl, and when he answered the phone, we just threw it over to Craig, who just like started talking like Sam Kinison. And it was just... It was incredible. Just he started going off. He's like, I can't do the voice, but he's like, yeah, I think I screwed your wife and took your coke. Sorry about that. Back in the day, just want to apologize. I've been meaning to get around to it. And I finally had a chance to. And it is just, if you have a chance to go see Craig Gass, please do, because you will not be disappointed. His Sam, you close your eyes and it's like you're in a time machine. It's incredible.
You know, our mutual friend, well, I don't know if you remember, Mike Chase, who does the Mike and Amy show over at KWJJ, he actually is, he's friends with Gass. And the first time I ever experienced the Gass, because again, the same thing that always happens to me, he's like, I got this comedian. I'm like, comedian, schmedian, you know, get out of here, you know, whatever. And he's like, no, you'll regret it. And I'm like, I'm not booking a comedian, leave, you know, and whatever, and just being a dick. And the next thing I know, it's like the phone is ringing while we're on the air one day. I'm like, you know, hello, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this? You know, whatever. And then it's Gass on the other end as Sam. And I was like, and, you know, and I, again, I can't do the voice either. But in fact, he's my voicemail greeting, or one of my phone rings is like him as Sam, as my, you know, Rick, answer, Sam Kinison, answer your phone. And so you, I mean, you've heard that. And I, but, you know, yeah, it's a flawless Kinison. I'm like, hey, Rick Emerson Show. And he's like, Rick. Rick, it's Sam Kinison. And it was like my brain bent in half. And he's like, I hear you don't want me on the show. I hear Mike Chase called up and wanted you on the show, and you didn't want me on the show. What's up with that? And I was just, and it just it blew my freaking mind. Yeah, so if anybody wants to start with Kinison, I would recommend you can get these now. You can get Have You Seen Me Lately or Louder Than Hell.
Louder Than Hell was what I started off on, and I think it's a really good introduction to Sam and his preacher madness.
There's also a a great Kinison stand-up special you can get called Breaking the Rules, I believe, is the one that we were playing from earlier. That's the one in L.A. that HBO aired, and also the book Brother Sam by Bill Kinison. So good stuff. Well done, Mr. Big Jim.
Thank you very much. Excellent. I think just to give a sneak preview, the next one we will do, the next Humor Me Comedy 101, we're going to take on Joan Rivers because
really?
Yeah, because I feel, you know, I want to give equal time to, you know, to
the fairer sex.
To the fairer. I was going to say that, too.
Excellent. All right. Mr. Big Jim Willig, you can find out more about him by going to Facebook.com/Jim Willig, like willing with no N. And there's a Facebook.com/Jim Willig. And as we get closer to the end of the year, we'll talk more about your gig, which is going to be coming up at
the Baghdad.
You're going to be headlining there.
That's right.
That's Facebook.com/Jim Willig. Excellent. Fantastic. All right. It is 503-505-6964. Don Taylor, you will make the call.
Yes.
What shall we do here?
Well, I should do the Stupid Criminal of the Week.
All right. Let's do this. It is your Stupid Criminal of the Week for Friday, November 19th, 2010, brought to you by MugshotList.com. It is MugshotList.com. Operated by our good friend Andy, mugshotlist.com, where, of course, you can see multiple states and many counties being added every day, updated around the clock by an army of robots. Full membership lets you search mugshots by name, by category, by gender, by state, by whatever. The mugshotlist.com bringing you this, your Stupid Criminal of the Week, Don Taylor.
Police in southwestern Pennsylvania say they've recovered one of two rings a man swallowed after he allegedly stole them from his mother. And they are waiting for him to produce the other.
Okay.
53-year-old Robert Spriggs was charged with theft for allegedly stealing the rings, each valued at $30,000,
wow,
while visiting his 81-year-old mother on Saturday. Police said Spriggs swallowed one he had in his pocket during questioning. Police said he was had previously swallowed the other ring. Spriggs is in Washington County Jail in a cell without a flushable toilet. Police said they had recovered one ring on Monday, but it wasn't immediately clear if they had found the other
yet. I mean, but that sucks so much for the guy. Because, are they diamond rings, you said, or am I just assuming that?
They're some kind of jewels.
That's a hard, sharp substance, first of all. That's, you know, anything that they can use to cut glass can cut the inside of your anus. Also, you know, you got to figure being a cop sucks under the best of circumstances. Because, you know, you got to deal with criminals. You got to, you know, sometimes it's dangerous, it's risky, sometimes it's low pay, you don't get the respect of the community.
And then sometimes you just have to sift through somebody's poop.
Sorting through a guy's feces, looking for a ring you don't then get to keep. And the guy stuck in a cell with no toilet, which sucks. Right. It's funny that they have a toilet with no, or a cell with no toilet, which means that this thing must happen with astonishing regularity, right?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I've only been in jail ever once, and it was just on a traffic violation, and I was in a holding cell that didn't have any facilities. Yeah.
Oh, no. I totally had a toilet when I was arrested, and I demanded nothing but the best. I was in a holding cell with a toilet, and I remember this because there was a guy who looked just like Stevie from, you know, it was like on the Eastbound and Down, where the rest of us are just trying to block out the back door in a holding cell, and there's a guy just pushing one out like 3 feet away.
Oh, that's nice.
And it just echoes, and, you know, you're just like, oh, come on, dude, really? And it's like, I guess you gotta go. Yeah. So,
anyway, so there you go. And that makes Robert Spriggs our Stupid Criminal of the Week.
There you go. There's your Stupid Criminal of the Week, brought to you by mugshotlist.com. That's mugshotlist.com. And I should say, as we get ready to, I'm going to talk about Castalia Language Center here in a moment, but we should lead off. Do you have that story that you referenced about 10 minutes ago?
I have it right here.
So just to mix things up a little bit, so here's what I'm going to tell you. We'll bookend this, as they say. We'll make this a little bit of a donut. So I will say up front, the following story is brought to you by Castalia Language Center, where you can learn Spanish. If you are an adult, you missed out at learning Spanish in high school, you didn't learn it properly in college, you feel like they didn't teach it to you in the right way, go to PortlandSpanish.com. That's PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel and the rest of the teachers and staff at Castalia Language Center can teach you Spanish in a conversational, laid-back, colloquial way, which means you're going to be able to speak it more fluently. You're going to learn it faster, more efficiently than you might have back in high school, because it's not based on memorization. It is speaking conversational Spanish by speaking conversational Spanish conversationally with other people and in small class sizes as well. That is PortlandSpanish.com. They are bringing you this story. Don Taylor.
A political campaign video that compares voting to a sexual experience has caused outrage in Spain. The video, produced for the youth wing of the Catalan Socialist Party, shows a young woman who is so excited by casting her ballot that she has an orgasm in front of a group of bemused polling officers. The advert concludes with the phrase, "Voting is a pleasure," after she puts her voting slip in the voting box. The campaign hopes to encourage abstaining young voters to turn out for the socialists in upcoming elections in the Spanish region, but the video has caused outrage amongst conservative groups. The Catalan Nationalist Convergence and Union Coalition condemned the video as filth, and the Conservative People's Party accused the young socialists of using women and attacking their dignity. You can actually see the video if you go to telegraph.co.uk, and they the Telegraph newspaper has the video.
Has any one of the political parties here in America thought of just not horrors as such, but just getting women, maybe like V girls, as they used to be called back in the war, girls who will just agree to F you if you vote?
I think that's illegal, but it sounds like a good idea.
But it's not illegal because you're not giving them goods or services.
Well, you're giving them services.
You're not.
Someone is.
Just getting a girl who will like agree to, everybody knows some girl who will just, not all that particular. You say, "Hey, baby, for the good of the country, if a guy votes, shows you the thing, will you give him a little, weave his basket?" And she says, "Sure." I mean, she's not being paid.
Yeah, I guess if she's just being patriotic. But then again, if you're specifically asking them to do it, I don't know.
If I asked you to have sex with somebody, that's not illegal. You'd probably say no, but I mean, I'm just saying, theoretically speaking.
I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. It could be procurement.
Okay, right now, political advisors, Rick Emerson, is giving you that idea for free. I mean, I would do it myself, frankly. That's a thing I might take the time to pursue, but I just, who has that kind of disposable time? It's certainly not I. I got things to do. So you just, you look into that because, I'm just saying, 2012, right around the corner. So, it's important to turn out the vote.
Well, this Spanish orgasm ad is actually quite amusing. It's cute. It's not. That's the thing. It's not filthy.
It's not dirty.
I wouldn't call it dirty. She has her orgasm that she has is probably not much more graphic than those shampoo commercials for whatever that shampoo
is. It's like a sneeze, but nicer.
Yeah.
All right. Exactly. What celebrity does she most resemble?
I have no idea.
Really?
I don't know. Here.
All right. I guess I can look at it. I'm just saying for those who are not able to view.
Here, hold on. You tell me.
Now. Oh, she looks like Lisa Edelstein, who plays Cuddy on House.
Oh, yeah, she kind of does.
There you go. There got it in one. It's the power of Rick Emerson. Yeah, she looks like Lisa Edelstein back when she played Bobby Bernstein on Sports Night. Wow.
Okay.
I'm a fan.
There you go.
Rick Emerson likes this.
And she's all excited about having, the thing.
Just going to say stuffing the ballot box. Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. I'm also going to say polling place.
Polling place.
Okay, there you go. This is brought to you by Castalia Language Center.
Yeah, the word poll.
Stuffing in the ballot box. Brought to you by Castalia Language Center. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Yeah, I'm a fan. I like her.
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you what. We'll do a brief thing. We'll come back on the other side, wrap this up. And at the end of today's program, by the way, as promised, once we wrap this up all together, which for those of you listening live will be around 3:25, 3:30, we'll end with Blood Rock going out to my man Ben, who's going to be flying over the Thanksgiving vacation. So we'll end the show with Blood Rock. We'll get to that here in just a bit. So we're going to do this. We're going to come back. I do want to just take a moment to we'll get to Blood Rock later on the other side. We have a new story. story as well to get
to. Well,
I'm going
to talk about the ringtone thing.
We got the ringtone thing, so we'll do that. So, okay, so that's what we'll do. We'll do this. We'll come back, talk ringtones. We'll blood rock. We'll end. We'll laugh. We'll talk. We'll dance.
Will we actually dance?
Maybe. We'll dance inside, Don. We'll dance here. I do want to take a moment just to play a little something. This is for a longtime listener and supporter of the show. This is for our good friend Kara, who is one of the hardest of the hardcore, one of our longtime P1s, who we're all dog people here, right?
Yeah.
And so I will just – I will play this for Kara, who is unfortunately saying goodbye to her dog today.
Aww.
And not to be a downer about it. So I will play a song that is about remembering dogs as they lived and as they are important to us. So he actually makes a joke about this at the beginning of the performance. This is actually a live version of this song, which is my favorite version. It is, as he notes, a man named Cat singing about a dog. So forth. To paraphrase Mr. Stevens and something he says later on in the song, people may fade, but your dog will always stay. So this is Cat Stevens. This is for our friend Kara and for everybody who loves their dog. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. We're back right after this. Don't go anywhere.
To go back even further now, about 4 or 5 years, I think. This was the first song I released, and must have looked like a terrible height because, Cat Stevens singing I Love My Dog must have been very strange. But anyway, I meant it. This is called I Love My Dog. I love my dog as much as I love you. Do you? May faith, my dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you. Do you may faith, my dog will always come through. All the pay I need comes to shine through his eyes. I don't need no cold water to make me realize that I love my dog as much as I love you. Do you may faith, my dog will always come through. Dog, as much as I love you, the you may fade, my dog will always come through.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-7200. 6964, 503-505-6964. In just one moment, we will do a follow-up on something we talked about earlier this week and something that Don Taylor talked about on Ham-Fisted Radio on Wednesday, which is this benefit that is happening tomorrow, I swear to God, to benefit pirates, which is just a phrase you don't hear often enough in this world. And that is because the city is, and we'll find out the truth of this, because I missed Wednesday's show, and I know you guys were going to talk about whether or not the pirates were actually getting hit by the city for this cost of, like, reseeding the grass in the park and the Pirate Festival, which seems like crap because it rains. So we'll get to that in a second. Let's talk about the Don Taylor ringtone contest. So we've been having people submit ringtone suggestions for the song that will ring on Don's phone to indicate that I, Rick Emerson, am calling. And then if she ends up picking your selection, then she'll record a little something special for you on your phone.
So now, we had previously gotten some really good suggestions, like the theme from The Wire Season 5, Wing doing the Beatles, the Star Blazers opening theme. A couple of people suggested that. A whole lot of suggestions just poured in yesterday. So we do have, in no particular order, the WKRP in Cincinnati theme. I'm Going Slightly Mad by Queen, which someone said they thought would be fitting song for you.
Okay.
The Spanish version of David Lee Roth's Yankee Rose. Got two different suggestions for that.
I got to tell you, now that's a thing I could wholeheartedly endorse right there.
I do like that one. And that would be, there would be two different winners if I chose that one, because two different people suggested that.
All right, then.
Someone says, I'm a loyal listener located in Japan. My brother lives in Portland and introduced me to the madness a couple of years ago. My first nomination for Rick's ringtone was chosen not because it is appropriate nor related to Rick. I chose it because I think it would do your head in and predict it would induce in you a visceral hatred for Rick over time. The Benny Hill theme.
Oh, the yakety sax?
Yes, he just wants me to hate you.
Okay.
He wants to condition me to hate you.
I don't think he knows how close you are to that already, like on a daily basis.
I have one listener, podcast listener Andy, suggested two songs that were both suggested by multiple people and are both very good suggestions. He suggested, again, the Spanish version of Yankee Rose.
All right.
And, like someone else suggested, White and Nerdy by Weird Al.
All right, I could see that.
Which is also a very good suggestion. Here we have one. My suggestion for Rick's ringtone is, for your phone, should be The Rover by Led Zeppelin. As my memory recalls, sometime it also fails me, it is Rick's number one Led Zeppelin song from a top five many years ago. It's also a great tune that has not been beaten to death on KGON.
Wow. Okay, I was just going to say, that's strange that he would pick that of their many, many recordings, because that is my favorite Led Zeppelin song. I guess I'm impressed, that somebody would actually remember. It's a relative statement, because I'm a huge Zeppelin fan, but that is, in fact, my favorite Led Zeppelin song. Yes.
I have... a listener named Paul sent in a whole big old list of songs, which I would have to actually listen to because I'm not familiar with most of them. Someone named Sid Dale, Music for TV Dinners, the 60s, which he says it's the tune, era, and commercial aspects of the song match Rick's vocal tone and style verbatim. Says, plus the high and loud brass section should be easy to hear from your pocket or purse on the iPhone speaker. But also suggests... Funkin' Fusion, Disc 1, by someone named Fink. Peter McConnell, a song, this is all part of this is from the printer product, The Meal Circus, from an album called Psychonauts.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Something from the PS1 game disc for Ridge Racer Revolution. So, yeah, he's got a bunch of stuff like that, which I'm not familiar with most of them. I'd have to actually listen to it. Someone else suggests I Don't Want to Grow Up by the Ramones.
Hey, I dig that.
Which is a good one. The Eastbound and Down theme, someone suggests. Also, the jazz flute scene from Anchorman.
No, I'm less in favor of that. There's some great suggestions there. Here's the thing. I will just say that I pity you, because Don Taylor, I don't know that I could actually, I don't know that I could come up with a winner there.
I also got a listener named Dan who seems to know both you and I very, very well. His suggestions, number one, White and Nerdy, Weird Al. Number two, On the Run by Gangsta Grass. Number three, the Dickies' Killer Clowns. Number four, Suicidal Tendencies Institutionalized. And number five, pick any song by the Ramones.
All right. No, I'm officially overwhelmed. I just have no. It's the tyranny of choice.
So this is why I'm going to take the weekend to actually pick one, because I have a few that I'm leaning towards, but there is too much, and there are too many really good ones.
Right.
So I'm going to have to announce this on Monday.
All right. Before we wrap everything up here, and before I play Blood Rock for our friend Ben, by the way, we've had several people suggest in the text box here something from Death Clock. Which is the Metalocalypse.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Who apparently put on a Righteous Live show, which I've missed twice and is, I guess, like the best thing that's ever existed. Let's talk about the Pirate Benefit, which is happening tomorrow.
Right.
So is it true? So the city is hitting them to reseed the grass that was torn up only because it happened to rain during the Pirate Festival, which is a thing you think the city would budget for in Portland.
Yeah, I had Dan Clark on Hamfisted Radio on Wednesday, and he's not an official member of the board of the Portland Pirate Festival, but he works with all of the guys who, you know, with the different groups that do the festival. What happened is every year they do the festival. It's at Cathedral Park in St. John's. They have to pay a sizable permit to the city of Portland, and they have to give them a sizable deposit as well.
In advance.
And then they have to pay if there's any kind of like horrible damage to the park. And so it's cost them a fair amount of money in past years, the first year that they did it. This year, the weekend they did it, there was just that horrible driving sideways rain that was just, it was nasty that weekend. And so the gate wasn't what they had hoped for. They didn't have as many people turning out for it to begin with. Then the grass got really soggy and wet, and people walking around on it, and booths set up, and people dragging cannons across it, and whatever. It got all dug up. What they did was, in the next couple of days, when the weather cleared, a couple of days later, they actually went out on their own dime and spread out 30 bags of grass seed.
Really?
In the park, just to try and make things
good
better
for them.
But still, they are not. They're going to get hit with thousands of dollars in fees from the city of Portland to repair the park. And it turns out, apparently, the deposit that you give when you do something like this, that money apparently goes someplace completely different.
It doesn't actually go to the cost of things like prospective repairs.
It is not applied to the cost of the repair of the park. So, so they're getting completely hosed. And the thing is, if they don't come up with thousands and thousands of dollars...
That was going to be my question.
They're not going to be able to do the festival next year at all.
Wow. So it's not even a thing that they would be able to do the festival and then pay it toward that. They would actually then be precluded from doing the festival altogether.
Right, this is just going to keep them from being able to afford it next year at all. So what they're doing is they're having this fundraiser called the Swashbucklers Ball. But really what it is in its way, it's kind of like a mini version of the Pirate Festival indoors.
Right.
It's at the Melody Ballroom. There's going to be four bands, and they're all people who play at the Pirate Festival. There's going to be lots of live music. All the pirate reenactor guys are going to be there doing piratey things. There's going to be food and beverages for sale. They're having a raffle, and they're raffling off just a whole lot of just super amazing prizes. A lot of the vendors from the Portland Pirate Festival are going to be there selling their goods, just like they were at the Pirate Festival. And the thing is, it's like for the same, basically about the same amount of money, because I think to pre-order tickets was, I think, $13, $14. I think it's a few dollars more at the door on Saturday. It's $15 to get into the Pirate Festival. Well, this, you're like getting in, you're going to get all of the same exciting experience of the Pirate Festival, but it's inside and you're not getting rained on.
And you get the knowledge that you're helping pirates.
And it's a fundraiser for the festival itself. So that's at the Melody Ballroom Saturday night. It's from 7 to midnight. And it is 21 and over, which to me also is another plus. The actual Pirate Festival itself in the park is all ages, so there's kids, which is great for kids. But this is going to be a little bit rowdier.
This means more wenches.
More wenches, more drinking, more boozing. It's going to be, I think it's going to probably be in a lot of ways a lot more piratey.
And when we say tomorrow, by the way, we mean that is Saturday the 20th. That
right.
is Saturday, November 20th.
At the Melody Ballroom. Right.
Saturday, November 20th, which, by the way, is also the birthday of our Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. Mm. We want to take a moment to wish a happy birthday to Cheryl Kanakoa, who turns
22. 21. I have no idea how old she actually is.
You know me either. She just exists in some weird, she's like some Bruce Agler vacuum, you know, sealed age thing where like ages go for people who, you know, I don't know how old anybody is. I was actually thinking about it. I don't know. I don't know how old anybody on the show is. I don't know how old you are, how old Bruce is, how old Cheryl is.
I know how old Bruce is because he told me.
Yeah, I think you said that at one point that he mentioned it to you, but it's just a thing. I'm completely in the dark about it. So however old, you know, she may or may not be, you know, she's more competent, mature than I am. So happy birthday to Cheryl from all of us. So you can find out about the Rick Emerson Show Thanksgiving Spectacular. That's going to be posted over the weekend. We'll have more details on that. So you can go to rickemerson.com to find out about that. That is happening next Thursday. That is next Thursday, which is the 25th of November. Following a brief musical interlude, which will be the Blood Rock song, DOA, which is going out to our friend Ben. There'll be an encore of today's Legion of News program, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. Then we'll be back Monday at noon for Legion of News, and shortly after 1 o'clock on Monday for the Rick Emerson Show. We want to thank our guests, who included Mr. Big Jim Willig. You can find out more about him at facebook.com/Jim Willig, W-I-L-L-I-G, facebook.com/Jim Willig. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. A generous grant by y'all is what makes this program possible on a daily basis, as well as our many fine business partners. So thank you to each and every one of you. Have a fantastic weekend. We will see you Monday. Be safe. Bye now.
Something in the air. straight at the uptown dent. His face as pale as it can be. He bends and whispers something softly. He says, there's no chance for me. Teach me how.